Okay, if we can begin, we have a couple more of our finance bills to work on this afternoon. And we begin with Senate File 1989, the Higher Education Finance Bill, Senator Pappas.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm here today to present the Senate Higher Education Budget Bill. And I'm actually very disappointed in my work and the work of the committee. I feel like this is a status quo bill. We focus on inflation and funding the core of our higher ed institutions and the core of our financial aid program. But with the exception of more financial aid for veterans, this really is a no new programs, stick to the core, fund inflation, fund technology. There isn't a lot of things in here that is very exciting. We only had $293 million in new money for higher education, which is not going to move us any closer toward funding two-thirds of the cost of education, which is really a goal of mine and my committee. We, as recently as 7 years ago, the state paid for two-thirds of the cost of higher education, and the student paid for one-third. We're now at about a 50-50 ratio, and I think if it takes us 7 to 10 years to get that correct, two-thirds, one-third back, we should be working on it, but unfortunately this budget that I present to you today does not do that. I'm going to run through the bill fairly quickly, focusing on the finance issues and not so much on some of the policy issues, because this does contain policy. The funding increases include 8% to the Office of Higher Education, a little under 14% to the University of Minnesota, about 11% to MinSCU, and with a total of about 11% increase to higher education. On page 2 of the bill, this shows you what we did with the state grant program. We had money that we generated within the program because we were running a surplus and because of some changes in the Pell Grant program. And so we were able to actually, within our appropriation, we're able to give more money out to students. So with the state grant, we are able to raise the cap about $400 from the current level. The university is getting close to this cap, so this will accommodate their tuition. This is the cap we set for the private colleges. We also set the living and miscellaneous expense allowance of $5,550 on line 316, and that's an increase of $200 from the current level. We funded the Minnesota GI Bill at only $10 million, even though the request was for $30 million, because that's all we could afford. However, we have front-loaded it in the first year so that if the money is spent in the first year, we've demonstrated that there's a greater need for the program. We really aren't quite sure what it's going to cost. And I think I have language in here later that explains the structure of the program. Subdivision 4 is for merit scholarships. That was going to be in the second year. This is going to come out of the bill with an amendment I'm going to offer. This is a new program that was requested by the governor, but I felt that upon second thought and discussing with leadership and members that we are going under our base with financial aid and that we really should be giving that money to all students through the financial aid program. I am retaining study language that will be here later in the bill so we get more information about whether merit-based scholarships to high school students really have an impact and influence on getting them to go to college. The appropriation for the public safety officer survivors account, 4-9 is interstate tuition reciprocity. That's for North Dakota. We owe them money, so we have to pay them money. 4-14, our work-study grants are staying the same. If you want to follow along on the spreadsheet, you could do that as well. While I talk about these, let me point it out on the spreadsheet. Child care. On page 2, under other programs, we did do an increase in the child care program of, I believe, from $2,200 to $2,600 per student, and that's on, these aren't numbered. If you look halfway down the page under other programs, you'll see child care. Under the column Senate over February forecast 08-09, it's kind of the column to follow. We did do an increase to, I mentioned tuition reciprocity, the Learning Network of Minnesota. We did a slight increase of 1.15. Minitex, we did an increase of $3 million. And that's also listed here on page 4 of the bill. Other programs, you want to go to page 3 of the spreadsheet. No, I'm wrong. Not page 3 of the spreadsheet. Page 1 of the spreadsheet. Other programs. Again, that same column, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 from the right, Senate over February forecast 08-09. And I'll be referring to the numbers in that column. We go back between the bill and the spreadsheet. On the bottom of page 4, 4.31, there is an increase in dollars, I think about $70,000, to the Campus Compact Collaborative. It's a bill brought to us by Senator Sharon. On page 5.4, there's a one-time appropriation to Augsburg College for the step-up program for chemically dependent students. On 5.9, there is a grant to, and I have an amendment to change this slightly, but it's for the University of Minnesota's Dakota language program. We have an issue with losing indigenous languages, so we're trying to help out in the training of teachers of indigenous languages.
But everything balances.
The 5.20, there's a $200,000 appropriation to the Loan Repayment Assistance Program. Senator Clark brought this to us. This is to try to retain lawyers to work for legal aid to help them pay off their debt, because if they come out of college with such a huge debt, they're not able to work for such low salaries. I think they're in the $30,000, $40,000 range. If their debts are like $700, $800 a month. So this does help pay off their debt so that they can stay working for legal aid. This is an area we have a study that we're asking the Office of Higher Education to do in this whole area of loan repayment, because we think that we may have some more needs in that area, especially with graduate education. 5.27 is $50,000 in one-time money bill that Senator Latz brought us for low-income students to be able to go to Washington Center in Washington, D.C. for an internship, and they have to match that money. We did a slight increase on 6.12 to a couple of our family residency programs, United Family Practice and Mayo, to bring them up, especially Mayo, up to where they were a couple years ago, and then we're trying to keep them all at parity. The agency administration on 6.29, we are doing a compensation of at least 3.25% over the base, and you'll see that on page 1 of the spreadsheet in the top section, agency administration. The last three lines are compensation. Subdivision 18, balance forward, that's boilerplate language. Transfers authorizes the Office of Higher Education transfer money between different programs they administer. Then we get into the appropriation for MNSCU. $120,000 we added in each year is for county higher education. I think that's a $40,000 increase, a request from Senator Bach. The MNSCU appropriation, we focus on inflation, on technology, and on initiatives to recruit and retain students traditionally underrepresented in higher education. We're working on some accountability measures and some goals, and one of our first goals is to get more of these students who are not traditional students, whose parents did not go to college, into college. And so MNSCU has developed some best practices with some money we gave them last year, and this way they'll be able to spread those best practices throughout more of their campuses. At the bottom of the page, 8.34 and 8.35 has to do with an initiative where and I'm going to have an amendment in this, where the two-year colleges are being asked to go to flat tuition. This is a workforce development issue to bring more people into our state. The statistics have shown that 80% of Minnesota students who go to school in Minnesota stay here, And it's between 60 and 70% of non-Minnesota students who go to school here stay here because they get jobs here. And the business community supports this initiative very strongly because they're trying to get more talent into our state, anticipating a workforce shortage in the not-too-distant future. 9.5 to 9.9 is clarification of a legislation that we had 2 years ago on competitive compensation. 9.10, 200,000 is Senator Roebling and Senator Wieger worked on some textbook issues around textbook costs, and this is to experiment with a textbook rental program for students. Students also worked on that quite a bit. Section 5 at the bottom of the page begins the University of Minnesota appropriation, and on 10, line 10.9 begins descriptions of what they're going to be spending their dollars on, and I gave them quite a bit of flexibility, but it's expected that, you know, again, the advancing education, the compensation, the inflationary costs will be covered, and they'll have to figure out what to do with new initiatives to reallocate or end programs because we just don't have money in here for new initiatives. We did put on 11.8 and 11.9, we did put $20 million in the base for the U of M and Mayo Partnership for Research in Biotechnology and Medical Genomics. This is Senator Lynch. She strongly supports this. There is one-time money that is being carried, I think, in Senator Tomasoni's bill, but the really important thing is the ongoing money. So we hope that we have room in our tails to do this. We plan for it, and I think this is a very important initiative. Under Agriculture and Extension Service, we did put in a little additional money to help promote alternative livestock research and outreach to promote sustainable and organic agriculture research and education. This is a new market, a new area where there's a lot of interest. And we transferred under Health Sciences, the St. Cloud Residency, Family Practice Residency Program is being transferred to, it's been part of Mayo, it's being transferred to the university. This is, we've done no increases to the system specials, except for a $150,000 each year for the Industrial Relations Education Program. We did a slight increase for the medical school and the Mayo Medical School and the Mayo Family Practice Program. I think bringing them partway, I think the governor had put in about a 14% increase. We do less than that, but we're trying to bring them back up to where they were before they were cut. Section 7 asks the Department of Education to do a study regarding affordable access to higher education. And then we also asked them to do a study on page 14, section 8, that was in the governor's bill on participation in post-secondary education by income, persistence in graduation rates. Then following a Senator Latt's request for speech pathologists, we wanted them to look at this whole loan repayment issue. Is this an issue we should get involved in terms of having a total financial aid package? On page 15.3, at the request of Senator Olson, Sarah Mary Olson, the Office of Higher Education should look at transferring the American Indian Scholarship Program over to them as opposed to being in the Department of Education. It just seems like it's a better fit. Mr. Chairman, I wanted to make a slight amendment right now, and that is on page 15, line 8, to delete higher. The report should be submitted not just to the Higher Education Committees, but also the Education Policy Committee, because, you know, they're the ones that have jurisdiction now, and Senator Stump's committee has jurisdiction now. And we weren't kind of ready to deal with Senator Stump. He's hard to deal with. Senator Wieger, he's really hard to deal with. We thought we'll just take a look at this study. So, Mr. Chairman, let me just move that oral amendment.
Okay, you'd like to do that right now?
Yeah. Just delete okay. Higher.
Senator Pappas moves the amendment. Is there further discussion on that? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman, Section 11 on page 15 asks Minsky to prepare to move to flat tuition, but I did give them some money to start with the two-year colleges. Section 17 is looking at merit aid. It's a study, and we do keep the study language, although we don't fund it in the second year. I take out the funding in the second year. Let's see. This is Section 13 on page 16 is to look at a task force to study and explore rental programs. I do have an amendment in this area. We were told that if our courses are too official, we have to go to a state government committee. So we have a proposal to change the language to make them a little less official. They don't really need to be. They can be more advisory and more unofficial.
Mr. Chairman?
Sarah Parasol.
When this has been encountered in some other committees, instead of calling them, I don't know, officialdom, but they were changed to advisory, I think, in nature instead of task force. The administrative rules are, and it's the rules of open meetings and that kind of thing all apply to.
Yeah. I think I have that in the A8 amendment, that language. Let's see it here, A8. So thank you, Senator Parasol. We'll make sure that
I'm not sure if we're speaking of the same thing, but I think we are.
Yeah. We'll look at that language when we get the amendment. The
Senator Frederickson.
Chairman, Senator Pappas. Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, Senator Pappas, could I go back to Section 11 for just a second?
Mm-hmm.
And that the first sentence, actually the first phrase, if I read that literally, it would mean that tuition would be free for Minsky. Is to eliminate undergraduate tuition rates.
Oh, I think you're right.
Yes.
Is there a problem?
Ooh. Eagle eye.
Later it explains it. That are different for non-resident students than for resident students. You have to skip over the reciprocity stuff and go to 15, 14, 15, 15. So, okay. Got your eagle eye.
I'll look at it a little further.
Okay. Article 2 on line 16 is, Mr. Chairman, if you don't want to see any of the policy stuff, I could not explain it. Do you want me to explain it?
Well, sir, Pat, is it?
Let's see. Technical change. I'm looking at this. These have to do with our funding policy, our higher education objectives, which are moved from from the laws to the statutes. But I also want to let the committee know that they're still in process as we move toward an accountability system. The page 18, section 4, cite sources of information used to determine appropriations for the U and Minsky. So I guess that's important for the Finance Committee to look at. Section 5 specifies the reports that Minsky and the U must submit to the legislature regarding the use of appropriations, tuition, and fee charges, and performance on various accountability measures. That's existing language. And Section 6 directs the U and Minsky to develop their budget priorities in accordance with the statewide objectives for higher education. Section 7 is the definition of resident student for tuition purposes, and I will have a clarifying amendment on that. Section 8 is a section that Senator Dill requested that we put in the bill on personal financial management skills. Section 9 is technical. Section 10 prohibits the colleges from marketing credit cards to their students on campus or making money off students' use of credit cards, but it does grandfather in if they have existing contracts. Section removes obsolete language, clarifying language. Section 14 on page 22 assigns responsibility for administering the Minnesota GI Bill to the Office of Higher Education. Section 15 extends the expiration dates for various advisory councils. Section 16 is technical. Section 17 is new reciprocity reporting language. Section 18 adds a requirement for groups that want to participate in the state grant program that they have to be licensed or registered as a post-secondary institution by the office or another state agency by July 1st, 2011. They have to be participating in the federal Pell Grant program. So that is putting more stringent requirements on these programs. They have to have that federal participation. Section 19 relates to the state grant program in reducing the amount families receiving a state grant contribute to their child's education from 95% to 85% and to 67% for independent students. The end of Section 20, 25.1, this is the way we deal with the surplus appropriation. We had been running deficit, then we were running surpluses, and we were trying to keep the state grant money within the state grant program and not having it cancel back to the general fund. So we gave the Office of Higher Education the authority to adjust the living and miscellaneous expense, and that resulted in the last 2 years of our ability to reallocate $24.3 million to students. And students saw an increase in living and miscellaneous expense by $715. So it was a significant gain for students. We'd like to retain that. The bill expires, removes the sunset, but I was talking to Mr. Mousman, and finance, I guess, would be more comfortable if we just extended the sunset. So, Mr. Chairman, if we could, on 25.2, delete the...
Reinstate the stricken language.
Reinstate the stricken language and then change the expiration date to 2009.
June 30th, 2009.
Yeah.
Okay, we have Senator Pappas' motion in front of us. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Aye. Motion carries.
Section 21 specifies when we get information to on the state grant program in terms of surpluses. Section 22, this is the child care grant. This is for students who have to withdraw from school to join the military. They're considered continuing students when they return in terms of the child care grant. On page 26, line 3, this, as I mentioned earlier, it increases the child care grant amount from $2,300 to $2,600. I think I said $2,200. And that was on our spreadsheet. That was $2.954 million to do that. This is section 24. This is the section that's deleted with an amendment. Section 25 is technical. This section 26 mirrors what we did earlier, but it refers to the self loan in that you have to be participating in the federal Pell Grant program in order to offer the self loan to your students. Sections 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, and 32 make technical changes. Section 33 authorizes the Office of Education to do interest swaps. And that would help them get better rates for their loans. That's on page 29. Then section 34, 35, 36, and 37 make technical changes. Go to page 31. This is a request authority being given to colleges to hire students with work-study grants, even if they're just going part-time, like in the summer. Section 39 increases the revenue bond limit for the Higher Education Facilities Authority. Section 40 all has to do with language relating to the intervention ICAP. What does it stand for? Intervention College Access Program. To also consider programs that are working on retention, not just recruitment for underserved students. And to say that on section 41, line 33.18, that students can be in grade 6 to 12. On section 44 is a change in the Minsky board membership, And Section 45 is has to do with the What I did in that is I made the Commissioner of Deed an official but non-voting member on the Minsky Board. And the duties of the Advisory Council to consider diversity in geography, gender, race, occupation, experience, et cetera. Then we get into Section 48, which has to do with recommendations from the Textbook Advisory Task Force to reduce the cost of textbooks for students. And this was more language that members of my committee worked on with students. Section 49 is the resident tuition for non-resident, non-reciprocity students at Minsky two-year institutions. I do have a clarifying amendment on that. And Section 50 says that the Minnesota Activity Fund receipts are appropriated to Minsky, not the Commissioner of Finance. Section 52 is our College Savings Plan program, and it has been underutilized, so we're trying to encourage more people to utilize it. So we're increasing the matching grant from $300 to $400. Section 53 is changes made in the Regent Candidate Advisory Council to more reflect the makeup of the legislature. We've gone back to the higher education committees, but not every education committee. So 75 was too big, 20 is too small. We're trying to have kind of a middle ground here. And also allowing the committee to actually make recommendations. But the governor is still included here. The governor is still in the loop. That's still a little controversial. Then we have the operating language for the Minnesota GI Bill, Section 56. And on the bottom of page 42, basically, we want the veterans to apply for the federal state grant, the state grant, any other benefits that they have, federal GI Bill. There is for National Guards, there's a tuition reimbursement program, which I think I'm adding in with an amendment. And then after that, we're going to look at has to come in within their cost of living, not just their tuition. We can include their cost of living, but there still is a cap at $1,000 per semester, $300 per year, and $10,000 total. And that was the original recommendation. We repeal some obsolete statutes.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Parasol.
Okay. I think I heard Senator Pappas say $300 a year.
$3,000?
Yes.
Per veteran a year?
I thought I heard you say $300.
I'm sorry.
I just thought the tape.
Yep. $3,000 per year, give or take a zero. Okay, then Article 3 really is all has to do with how we license private colleges and for-profit colleges, and we're actually moving the statutes around so that the 136 statutes are going to apply to all degree-granting institutions, both profit and not-for-profit, and the 141 statutes are going to apply to non-degree-granting institutions. So that's really what I think the rest of the bill is. That's what the rest of the bill is. So, members, I can spare you Article 3. Okay. If there aren't any questions, then I have some amendments. I apologize, Mr. Chairman. I have so many amendments. It's the rushing
Pappas
of everything.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Pappas, in my division, we have a bill that would give some TANF money for MPIP clients to be able to have work-study slots purchased for them. And I'm just, it's part of trying to meet our work participation rate. And I'm just wondering, is there room, I mean, can it create work-study slots if they had more money?
I think the Office of Higher Education is saying yes, they can.
Thank you.
Okay. Then the A2 amendment. I'll start explaining it, and then you might want to pass out the A5 amendment. The A2 amendment, lines 1.2 to 1.6, clarifies that the Minsky Board needs to allocate funds for other initiatives from reallocation of existing resources. And this was language that was requested by Minsky. 1.7 through 1.10 clarifies that the elimination of non-resident tuition applies to all two-year institutions. Again, a clarification requested by Minsky. And lines 1.11 to 1.18 adds the Veterans National Guard tuition and textbook reimbursement program to benefits that must be deducted from the cost of attendance before the Minnesota GI Bill benefits are determined. So the GI benefits are kind of the last in. But we still think that most veterans are going to get the $1,000 because of the cost of living is fairly significant. We're not just doing the cost of tuition, doing cost of living. So if there are no questions on the A2 amendment, Mr. Chairman, I'd move the A2 amendment.
Okay, further questions or discussion? Okay, if not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The A5 amendment, the new language is on 120 to 125. And it just says that the colleges can raise private money for the students that are affected by this provision. It's the A5 amendment. And you can pass out the A6 and the A7. Mr. Chairman, I'd move the A5 amendment.
Okay. We have Senator Pappas's motion in front of us. Is there further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Neville.
Give me another explanation what this does compared to the current Section 7.
This is actually existing language in the bill about resident tuition rate. It just had to be reorganized. So the new language is that's not in the bill now is 120 to 125. And that it says that the university in Minsk can raise private dollars.
Okay.
For these students.
Mr. Chair.
They're not eligible for a Pell Grant or state grant.
Okay.
Senator Neville.
This Section 7 is, that's what we call the DREAM Act provisions. What is the fiscal cost for this being in the bill?
There's no fiscal cost.
There's no fiscal cost? Okay.
Okay. Further questions on the A5 amendment? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? No. Motion carries.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Neville.
Let me clarify my question. There was no fiscal cost to this amendment, but is there a fiscal cost to the underlying Section 7 allowing resident?
No, there's no fiscal cost.
Aren't they assuming that there'll be any students at all taking advantage of it? How can there not be any fiscal cost?
I think partly it's an unknown, and partly it's none of these students are currently paying non-resident tuition, so there's no loss to the state.
So they're assuming that the in-state tuition rate will more than meet the marginal cost of the extra students?
I guess so.
Okay.
Okay. Senator Pappas?
A6. This is a clarification that private for-profit colleges who advertise I'm going to find the right line here. 1.8 and 1.19, I think. Before, in the bill itself, it says that they have to give this disclosure in advertisements, and they shall disclose in their catalogs. But the preferred language is that they may list this language in advertisements, but they shall disclose in catalogs. And the language that they have to disclose is on 110 through 113. I think this is in that last section that I told you that was all policy language and didn't have a fiscal impact, so I didn't go over it in the first place. I'd move the A6 amendment.
Okay. We have Senator Pappas' motion in front of us. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
Has the A7 been passed out?
Yes.
Okay, then why don't you go ahead and pass out the A8 and the A9. The A7, I mentioned this when we went through the bill, that we have kind of a crisis with indigenous languages, the Ojibwe and the Dakota language, that we're running out of native speakers. And so this is a proposal to fund a program at the university that trains, that will train teachers in the Dakota language. The University of Duluth operates a program to train teachers in the Ojibwe language, and this provides a little bump to the program training teachers in the Dakota language. And I had to rearrange the language. This is already in the bill, but I had to, the language had to be changed a little bit.
Questions? We've got the A7 amendment in front of us. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
With the A8 amendment? Oh, here's where I just removed the study language. Page 3. Page 3, delete the section. Mr. Chairman and members, this amendment is removing the funding for the merit scholarship program in the second year that was in the bill and putting that money into two financial aid programs. They are looking at actual tuition instead of average tuition, and that costs $4.3 million. Nope, that costs $10 million. And reducing the assigned family responsibility for independent students, and that costs $4.3 million. Why did we have some money on the bottom line or something? That we had a little bit of money on the bottom line. It's hard when you're doing this financial aid stuff because it's usually a specific amount of dollars, big hunk of dollars. Then we're also, we do retain the merit aid study. And we'll come back next year and look at that again after we get some more information. And we removed the study group language here so the bill doesn't need to go to state and local government. And that's on page 1, removing it somewhere. Okay.
All right. Senator Pappas moves the A8. Further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
Motion and finally, carried. Mr. Chairman, the A9 amendment is a bill we just heard in my committee today, and that is at the request of Senator Tomasoni with support from the university and Minsky to study the student demand and employer needs for higher education in the Mesabi Range area. And this was passed out of my committee and sent to full finance, but we need to get it into this bill.
Senator Pappas, I'm on your division, but wasn't at the meeting today. So what?
Senator Tomasoni had talked to us about this, and we all said go introduce a bill. So he introduced a bill so everybody knows what's going on. It was heard today in committee, and it was passed to full finance.
As the language says, which degree programs may be offered jointly. Mm-hmm. So would this envision setting up something relative to the university in the Mesabi area?
Or it could be an expansion on 2+2 programs. There's the Arrowhead Consortium. There's lots of different ways this could be configured. It wouldn't necessarily be a four-year college. I think some people think that this is, we're trying to get a four-year college at Mesabi Community College. That could be a direction that we go in. It'd have to come back to the legislature, though, for that. It might just be, maybe some programs that could be offered jointly with MinSCU and the University of Minnesota, depending what the employer needs are. I kind of don't know. That's why we want to do the study.
Chairman Pariseau.
Mr. Chairman, I'm trying to understand why we would want to limit it to the Mesabi range. Why I know that that's what they like. What's wrong with the rest of the state that may not be? Because you're talking about what do people want and what's available to them in their area, right?
Right.
I'm sure there are parts of the state that are rural who probably have some other interests as well, besides the Mesabi range.
Senator Pariseau, they can introduce the bill, and my committee will hear it.
Why couldn't this be made, Mr. Chairman and Senator Pipas, why couldn't this be made statewide?
Well, I think that's beyond the scope of what this is trying to talk about. We're talking about a limited number of institutions in northern Minnesota and the University of Minnesota Duluth, and it's not appropriate for those institutions to do a statewide study. I mean, that maybe is something HEAC and the Office of Higher Education could do, but I think that's just beyond. I mean, I'm not giving them any money to do this. I don't want to make them do too much.
Okay, we have the A9 amendment in front of us. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, I think I went over everything on the spreadsheet, although it was a little disorganized as we walked through the bill. But if members have any particular thing they're interested in, I can point it out.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pappas, I do have a question about the interplay between two sections. One is a section we talked about earlier, Section 11, the non-resident tuition. And there, that's for plans and to have the difference eliminated by the beginning of 2009-2010. And back on page 37, Section 49, you say that the board may not set an undergraduate tuition rate at community technical colleges that is different for non-resident students than for residents, and that's effective July 1st, 2007. It appears to be a conflict in dates. Is it, or is there something here that I don't see?
Well, I think, Mr. Chairman and Senator Frederickson, we can certainly look at those dates. I didn't kind of get them when you said them, but I think originally I did put the study language in and asked them to come back with a recommendation on how they're going to implement, not whether it's a good idea or not, but how to implement it. And then I decided to just spend the money and go ahead and do it for the first 2 years, because I think I'm really nervous about this workforce shortage, and I really think that we shouldn't delay it. We need to get moving. And I was getting a lot of really good support from the business community. The Minnesota Chamber testified in favor of it because they're also really concerned about workforce development issues.
And Mr. Chairman, Senator Pappas, my concern isn't about the issue.
It's
what appears to be an inconsistency in the two sections.
The dates between the study and the implementation. 4 years. Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Senator Frederickson, the study includes the four-year colleges. So I think it's still important to get more information about how we would move to flat tuition with the four-year colleges. It's my understanding that there are a smaller number of students from out of state that attend the two-year colleges than the four-year colleges. So it's more money, it's significant change, and so we, in a sense, we're kind of piloting it with the two-year colleges, but we still need to get more information about the four-year.
Okay. Senator Neville.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, I have a couple more questions about Section 7, the DREAM Act provision. Do our state universities and the U of M charge different tuition rates for graduate school? Because the language looks like it applies to graduate school as well. It doesn't limit it just to undergraduate. I'm not sure if we charge the same tuition for everybody once you get to the graduate school level?
No, I don't know if we have an in-state and an out-of-state rate for graduate school. I kind of think we do. We do. We do have an in-state and out-of-state rate for graduate school.
Okay. So this language appears that it will apply for graduate school as well. And I guess what I'm wondering as I read through this and try to understand how it'll work, students who graduated from Minnesota high schools who may have left the state for work would still qualify to come back to school, back to Minnesota for graduate school, and we get in-state rates. Is that your intent in this bill? I use my own kids as an example.
Let me think about that, because I think that the other provisions might kick in. You have to be a resident of the state for a year before you can get the in-state tuition.
Okay. This would not, where does it say that, okay, it's in addition to any other statute, rule, or higher education regulation or policy. So that would mainly be the one-year residency?
Right.
Okay. But it is your intent that this apply to graduate school, just distinct or differences in tuition as well, then?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Neville, I actually hadn't thought about graduate school. It had never come up before.
Yeah. Things like law school and speech pathology you mentioned before.
I know, it had never come up.
Okay. So you don't have a fiscal note on that part of it?
I need to look at this.
One of the reasons I ask is that it's my understanding that this section, you know, that other states have passed things like this,
mm-hmm.
and that at least in some court challenges to it, it's been upheld on the theory that residents of other states would have to, if they met these requirements, you know, they went to school 3 years and graduated in Minnesota.
Absolutely.
That it wouldn't. This doesn't apply just to undocumented aliens. This would apply to anybody in the country.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Neville, actually, anyone in the country would only have to be a resident for a year mm-hmm. before they could get in state. So this is a stricter requirement for undocumented students.
Right.
But that graduate school issue, I think we'll look into that. We'll look in that because I hadn't even thought about whether it would apply, honestly, to graduate school.
Okay. I think this deadline is.
The cost is so far beyond what any of these students could do.
I see. Okay.
You know, or being able to get loans or anything.
I guess so. We still.
I was just exploring unintended consequences.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, that's a really good question. We'll look into that some more.
Sarah Stumpf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I just have a few questions, and it's mainly because I don't serve on the Higher Ed Committee anymore. So
but
I don't,
you used to.
I did, and I enjoyed it. When you look at, and I apologize, some of these are not specific to finance, but yet I think they are important. When you look at the Higher Ed components, basically the University of Minnesota, the Minsky system, and the student financial aid system, what do you see as a chair of that committee being the biggest problems that we need to face or are facing in the next, now and in the next few years?
Tuition.
Okay.
I think the cost of education is just outpacing students' ability to pay, and we're seeing that in the huge debt loads that students are carrying.
And what has your committee come up with?
My committee has not come up with anything. We're barely able to control tuition. In order to do that, we would just have to have more money for Minsky and the university to hold down tuition increases. They rely on that tuition for their core costs. With this proposal, the university has said they had wanted to keep their tuition to 4.5% increase, but it's probably going to be more like 5.5. And I haven't even heard from Minsky what their tuition increase will be. They're hoping to keep it again at 4.5, but this isn't quite what their request is. It's below their request.
By January 15th,
when I was chair of the committee, one of the bright spots that we had worked on several years was the use of technology and trying to figure out ways that we might be able to maximize that and make higher education more efficient in terms of its delivery system. I didn't see anything in here relating to
one could filibuster this
or anything specific relating to technology or the use of internet too or the capacity, the building of capacity in that technology area.
Mr. Chairman, there is a small appropriation. You know, they asked for really a lot, and the governor gave them one-time money, and I gave them base money for technology infrastructure in page 3 under new initiatives. For MinSCU, it says inflation, technology infrastructure, and for the university, there's also a technology request. And in the language, the rider language, we talk about online classes. The irony with Mr. Chairman and Senator Stump with the online classes is that students are paying more for them because they're still developmental, and it costs, you have to pay the faculty to extra develop the online course. So they actually pay more for an online course.
That's still an avenue I think that business certainly uses is, you know, when you upgrade in technology, generally your efficiency goes up and your capacity goes up and your profits per amount may be less, but at least you're using a tool that generates a greater efficiency. The one area I think there's some MinSCU campuses and the University of Minnesota has a campus, is in the area of energy. Obviously, energy costs for everybody has gone up. I mean, that's just a given. And they're going to go up more. This spring, you're going to have a fairly high spike in increased cost of electricity, or significant increase anyway. Has there been any discussion of how we might be able to make our campuses more energy self-reliant? Mm-hmm. And what efforts are they looking at? The two campuses that I know of, I believe, or at least the one campus is Morris, the University of Minnesota,
right.
Morris. But I think if Congressman Peterson changes some provisions in his area that he works with, I think it'll open up that option to more places to own wind generators and other things.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stump, I think for more detail, it would maybe be good for you to, you know, to meet with some people from MinSCU and the U. But what they've, because I've asked those questions too, I just don't remember off the top of my head what they're doing. But they are very aware of that. They're very much in favor of the whole issue of global climate change and making sure that their buildings are not contributing to greenhouse gases, that they're operating them efficiently. A lot of the capital bonding requests have to do with new HVAC systems that are more energy efficient. I think Morris is the best example of being very innovative and using renewable energies. But I support and encourage them to do more in those areas.
Thank you.
So important.
See, I might miss your stuff.
Senator Betzel.
Mr. Chair, if I could revisit the issue that Senator Fredrickson brought up earlier on page 15, I think that the section 11 might need a little bit of rewriting, but let me at least make a suggestion here to put it at least closer to what I think it should be. If you look on lines 14 and 15, page 15, lines 14 and 15, there's a clause that says
Did we amend this section?
No.
There's a clause that says that are different for non-resident students than for resident students. If you take that clause and just move that same clause up to line 12 after the word rates, probably before the comma, then I think that you've you're not eliminating the tuition. You are pointing out that you want to eliminate tuition rates that are different from non-resident students from resident students. So you keep the idea in one place, and then the exception follows after that.
Yeah, that's fine.
So I'll move that, Mr. Chair. On line, well, page 15, line 12, after the word rates, before the comma, insert the words that appear in lines 14 and 15 that are different for non-resident students than for resident students.
Okay, we have Senator Bitzel's amendment in front of us. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Further discussion, amendments?
Mr. Chair.
Sir Neville.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, I might be reading this wrong, but there's a couple of spots where it seems like the bill and the spreadsheet don't match. I'll just give you one example. On page 3.7, state grant program, it's got, in the bill, it's got $138,604,000. On the spreadsheet, it has $144,656. Missing something?
The amendment changed the numbers.
Oh, there's an amendment?
The amendment that we passed changed the numbers to be consistent with the spreadsheet is after the amendments.
So the spreadsheet is the accurate number.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I missed that amendment. Sorry.
Well, I kind of did too, so.
Which amendment was that?
Just said change the numbers. On what? Which amendment was it? Adjust amounts accordingly on the A8 amendment, page 2 at the bottom. It says adjust amounts accordingly. Renumber, reletter, amend the title. A8 on page 2 at the bottom.
Oh. That says it right there.
So there's other places too. So that adjustment relates to the whole spreadsheet. Okay.
Okay. Further discussion. Chair Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, if there's no more discussion, then I would move that Senate File 1989, as amended, be recommended to pass.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Sir Neville.
Let me ask another question here. Okay. What are we doing about this interstate tuition reciprocity issue in this bill?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Neville, nothing.
Okay.
It has not been resolved. It's now at the level of the governor of Minnesota and the governor of Wisconsin negotiating. Neither one of them know what they're doing.
On this issue.
I feel like I need to call the governor of Wisconsin and say, why don't you just give scholarships to all your students instead of sending the money to the University of Minnesota to bring down the tuition? I mean, they feel very strongly about keeping their tuition down. And they're willing to pay us $12 million a biennium to do that. And they could send that money directly to their students. And their students could pay the same rate as university pays. I mean, it's probably too simplistic to think that my solution would work. But.
Okay.
So the university is going to do something drastic, I think, this summer. They might pull out of the reciprocity agreement. They'll give a 4-year warning.
So under the current agreement, the university can withdraw on their own?
Can withdraw collaboratively.
But Minsku cannot.
I'm not sure what Minsky will do.
They need authority?
It hasn't seemed to be as much an issue with them. I don't hear from the Minsky people very much about it. It's more a University of Minnesota issue.
Okay.
Maybe the tuition is not as different between the institutions.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Stump.
I'm sorry I missed this earlier, but in section 44, let's see, that would be on page what?
Page 34.
34, okay. Well, one of the problems that has cropped up is that the balance, and I'll say the geographic balance of the Minsky board is not exactly ideal. And 2 years ago, I think it was, or thereabouts, I had this map of the state of Minnesota. And this was before the last two board members actually were appointed, or three, I'm not sure. All of them were from the metropolitan area. Anyway, there were no, basically, I don't think we had any board members in the northern one-third of the whole state of Minnesota. And I could be wrong if there were new board members appointed, but, you know, we are one state, and we have campuses in northern Minnesota as well. And at that time, my proposal was to do it somewhat similar as to the University of Minnesota according to congressional districts, but now the 7th congressional district goes from Canada to Iowa, so it's maybe not the best. But what we did in the legislation was basically break a congressional district up into two, if you remember, so that you'd actually have two people representing a congressional district. And I'm not, I don't have an amendment because I just caught this or saw it, but when you, if this goes further on into conference, try to keep that into consideration, is that all the board members don't have to be from the metropolitan area. We have campuses throughout the whole state. That's one of the beauties of the MNSCU system and the University of Minnesota in the state of Minnesota, is that you have it's the best economic driver that we have available to us in greater Minnesota, is our higher education system. So let's try to keep that.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Stump, I do have language in here about the the selection criteria by the advisory council should include diversity and geography. That's 35.13. And in the current law, that's 35.13. And on the current law, on 34.22, it says at least one member of the board must be a resident of each congressional district. But you're right, if they're all from the southern part of those congressional districts, you're not really getting that northern representation. So
I know we speak differently and, you know, have some.
Yeah, sure. I know you do. So I'd be open to, I think we're always trying to figure out how we can get the right balance on the MNSCU board and get, you know, the people that MNSCU needs that are thoughtful and understand higher education, but people also understand the needs of the whole state.
Thank you.
So. Sir Neville.
Mr. Chair, and Senator Pappas, I had a visit today by the IBEW. The concern they had is that the tech colleges are graduating so many more electricians that way beyond what's needed, and maybe their focus on it is a little different than my question is, but did your committee discuss at all just whether or not the MNSCU system has some responsibility to try to direct people, especially in the tech college system, into the professions or the degrees that will, where there's a need, where the greatest need is, where there's employment. Did that ever come up, or is this kind of a late issue to be brought into the process?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Neville, no, this issue has been bubbling throughout session. It is a concern. I've told MNSCU it's a concern about how many of these programs we have. The Metropolitan Alliance is supposed to deal with that, like duplicative programs or phasing out programs if there are too many colleges are offering the same program and the employment market doesn't warrant it. Some of the responses you get are, you know, well, okay, we can stop training electricians, but then 10 years down the road, we're going to have a shortage.
Right.
You know, it's hard to judge that. And
so your committee was aware of it?
We are aware of that, and we're always talking to MNSCU about being responsive to the workforce issues. And the two-year colleges generally are. So I don't know why, in particular, this electricians thing is such a problem.
Okay.
We're certainly aware of it.
Mr. Chair? I'd like to just ask you to explain, apparently the governor's Achieve grants, one of his major initiatives, he was asking for about $79 million, and you funded nothing for it. Could you explain to us
how
you got to where you did?
And I did consider funding something, but frankly, we just don't have enough money to do new initiatives. So, you know, with the possible exception of the GI Bill for $10 million, that's really the only new initiative in the bill. I mean, there's some small amounts, $100,000, $150,000 here and there, but to do a major new initiative for $80 million when we've had so many unanswered questions about the program. So, you know, we thought we would do a study. The study comes back. There's next year. We could move ahead with it. There was a lot of discomfort in my committee about the whole idea of merit-based scholarships. And that is that really the direction we should be going in with our financial aid programs? So didn't happen.
All right. Thank you. Further questions from the committee? Okay, we've got Senator Pappas's motion in front of us. Before that, Ms. Hegart has asked for an opportunity to address the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to speak before you and to the members here. My name is Susan Hegart. I'm the director of the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. And I just wanted to say that I really appreciate the efforts of Senator Pappas. We, I believe, have a very good working relationship. And I know that she's had a difficult task trying to balance lots of different interests. That being said, on the governor's behalf, I have several comments about the bill that are of concern. The governor provided a balanced approach, we believe, in his budget proposal, funding for the systems. Times are much better now so that he was able to do that. New funding for the state grant program and funding for the ACHIEVE program, among other things. When you look at the bill, however, though, there's little trace of the governor's recommendations in the bill. And I'll just walk through those very quickly with you. In the state grant program, it is somewhat confusing, but there's a difference between what's appropriated and what's spent. We had suggested some ways to spend that better, and I think some of those recommendations were followed by the committee. Then there was an increase by the federal government of the Pell Grant program that's really targeted towards low-income students of $250 a student. When we couple that with our own program, and that creates some savings, about $20 million roughly, that money's been redirected back into the state grant program. But the governor had also proposed an additional $12 million in new money for the program. And I have to talk more with my staff, but it's not evident to us that that $12 million is in the bill.
It's spent in the GI Bill.
Senator Pappas, Mr. Chair, says that money was then spent on the GI Bill. So that money for the grant program that's targeted to middle and lower income students has been spent for the GI Bill. Second, the governor had felt very strongly he'd put a revised proposal forward on the ACHIEVE program. You know, his initial one was the top 25% of the high school class. He'd heard a lot of criticism, so he came back with what he felt was a really balanced approach that focused on existing programs, PSEO, AP, IB, concurrent enrollment, college and the schools. Students could earn both credit and get funding for those courses and take that with them to the college of their choice. That program is now reduced to a study. There is, he'd also targeted funding for the systems. The systems had come forward. Both of you and Minsky had very fine budget requests that they put together. They'd specifically requested some strategic direction in terms of the funding. That was not followed, and that money, there is no strategic targeting of that money as far as we can see in the bill. It's really a block grant, so to speak. The GI Bill is in this bill, and that's wonderful. It's funded at less the governor's request, but we're pleased at least that there's some funding for the GI Bill. And then finally, I think the governor's been clear with all of you on his position on the DREAM Act, and as far as I can tell, that piece of that proposal is still in this bill. And so, Mr. Chair, with that, that concludes my remarks. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Hegart. Okay. Any comments or questions from the committee? But thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we have Senator Pappas's motion in front of us that Senate File 1989 is amended to be recommended to pass. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Pappas. We have Senator Betzel. What did you do with Senator Murphy?
It was my day to watch him, too. So.
Okay, well, he'll have a second while people move around the room and leave, those interested in the higher education bill. Can we call Steve?
You came, boss. Good.
All right. Just in time, Senator Murphy.
sort of empty out the room.
You guys get to do the heavy work.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, but this was such a big bit. Yeah, thanks.
Okay, let's wait just a few more seconds. Senator Murphy?
See, by not naming it, by the
okay, well, we said that.
Can I get some words?
Yeah, we'll get something put in there. Matt's.
I'd probably have to run down to the office just to make sure I get the language right, you know, to describe the corridor. That's the only thing.
Okay, well, can
sure. You want me to do it now?
Okay, Senator Murphy, are you ready to...
Do you want to do it orally, though?
All right, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Murphy, before we start, you've got two bills on the agenda, and I understand that one bill you just simply want to have remain in the committee. You don't want to address that bill today. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. We'll be working off of Senate File 1986.
Okay, then, Senator Murphy.
It wasn't a very good year for me, but... That's what the number on the bill is. So, Mr. Chairman and members, we do have a series of amendments that we're going to go through here quickly to kind of get the bill in the shape that it needs to be in. But I want to talk just briefly, since this is the Finance Committee, about what the need is to the state of Minnesota. And Senator Dibble is also going to join us up here when we start talking about at the end of the bill. But, Mr. Chairman and members, we started this process several years back when Senator Arata was still in the legislature. And at that time, we did a study that Senator Arata and I co-chaired a committee. And we tried to involve everyone that has anything at all to do with transportation. At that time, the number came back just shy of $2 billion of underinvestment a year, and this was about 4 years ago. What's the state of affairs of transportation today? We're still underfunding transportation in this state about $1.8 billion a year. The added money that we are going to get from the invest has shrunk that $2 billion a year underfunding down to about $1.8. Of course, there's some inflationary figures in there, and that's why it's 1.8 instead of 1.65. Mr. Chairman, so we started this process early in the session of taking testimony from a lot of different user groups. And Senator Dibble is here, and he can speak on what his subcommittee did in regards to transit. And I was on that committee, and Senator Dibble did a great job of getting all the stakeholders to the table and taking hours of testimony. And we took Senator Dibble took the subcommittee out on the road, and I think we hit, what, five different places, St. Cloud being one of them. Every place that we went, people were – one, appreciative that we brought the committee out to talk about transit. And two, they were very excited about having an opportunity of getting in on the ground floor. Now, granted, we do have the Hiawatha line and we have bus service in the metropolitan area. In greater Minnesota, we have several counties that have no transit services at all. And in greater Minnesota, our transit options, we need to increase those in greater Minnesota. In greater Minnesota, we all know that 40% of the jobs are around $10 an hour. Not everybody can afford to you can't afford on $10 an hour to be a two-car family, but we do need to provide those transit options. The other thing in greater Minnesota that is driving our transit package at such a high rate is the age of our population. And everybody from, Senator Frederickson's district out the where Steve Dill lives, we all know that because we see the people in the coffee shops every day and down at the restaurant or, at the Y or whatever. And our average age grows every year. There's a lot of folks in greater Minnesota that choose not to drive or, quite frankly, aren't allowed to drive anymore. They still need to get to the doctor. They still need to go get their prescriptions taken care of. They want to go to sporting events that the grandkids might be in, and, the list goes on and on. But we heard a lot of testimony, and Senator Dibble, once again, I'll say it, Senator Dibble did a great job of putting the transit portion of this bill together. What's it mean for roads and bridges? I think that this is probably the most ambitious bill that has come through the legislature in many years, and we'll touch on all the high points. For greater Minnesota, the way that our roads get funded traditionally is through the gas tax, and we're raising that 10 cents a gallon in this bill. We also provide some other options for local units of government, whether it's a sales tax option, and counties in greater Minnesota can join together with joint counties through resolution, and of course they have to have a referendum out there, then they can provide even more transportation options. We also have the wheelage tax, which states takes the offset off, basically. Under current law, if, say, Meeker County out there decided to impose a wheelage tax, that money would come right out of your constituents' pockets, and it would be offset by a decrease in funding through the CASA formula. Nobody thinks that's fair, so we remove that offset so that counties can provide the transportation services, road services that need to be made. Members, through all the testimony, I think some of the strongest, I think the two strongest arguments to do this year is one where in greater Minnesota where approximately 70% of all fatal accidents happen, we need more troopers on the road because we've heard year in, year out. I've been here 15 years, been on the Transportation Committee for 15 years, and we hear about the four things that kill people. It's inattentive driving, it's drunk driving, it's not wearing your seatbelts, and it's speeding. It's four behaviors. That's 70% of all the fatal accidents are because of something that a driver does or something a driver does not do. A lot of times, the only way that you can change that behavior is to have a trooper out there on the road or a county sheriff. And that's why we put more troopers in this bill. The governor proposed to keep not only the 80-plus members of the state patrol that are going to retire in the next few years to try to keep that money so that we can keep those approximately, I believe it's 86, troopers have more classes and keep that 86 there, but another 40 on top of that would be spread out through the state to help with this enforcement. Now, 30% of all the accidents, crashes that happen out there are because there's something going on with the road. Somebody hits a pothole and gets thrown off the road, bad sight lines, you pull up to stop sign, you look both ways, you think it's okay to go, you pull out, and bam, you get smashed. So 70% is because somebody is doing something or not doing something behind the wheel. 30% are directly attributable to the road condition. And we want to change that. And that's, I think that's the biggest sell for greater Minnesota. 70%, over 70% of all those fatal accidents happen on rural two-lane roads. This bill is heavy to help our state trunk highway system and our county system and our municipal system move ahead. The other argument that I'll pose for everybody statewide, especially in the metropolitan area, is that we've heard from businesses. And, I mean, we've been hearing from businesses for 5 or 6 years now. Even the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce supports an increase in the fuel tax. And we all know why that is, because we're losing money. That's just the way it is. We're losing millions and millions of dollars of lost economic opportunity because we can't get goods and services to and fro, because we can't get our workers out of the parking lot down here on 94 and in front of their and to their job site. Members, so Ms. Berezovsky is here. We're going to start going through some of these amendments and get the bill into the shape that it needs to be in so that I can do a better job of presenting it. Members, we have the A2 amendment. And, Mr. Chairman, if we could get we'll go through these as quickly as possible, and I'll try and save some of the more I don't believe that any of them are real controversial, but I'll try to explain them as best as possible. Mr. Chairman and members, the A2 amendment is in relationship to when these reports about the forecast are reported to the legislature. You know, current state law says 2 weeks before the forecast comes out. We all know that that's not standard practice. Standard practice is that the department and MnDOT's been very good about coming and talking to us about where the forecast is at, but it's always, you know, around about the time when the forecast comes out or a few days after. So this just says that 1 week following the release. This is non-controversial, and I think it gets it into the shape that is standard practice. So I would move the A2 amendment.
Okay, we have Senator Murphy's motion in front of us. Is there further discussion on the A2 amendment? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, the next amendment is the A3 amendment, and this deletes Section 9, which is the airport funding advisory task force. This is a Senator Rest bill, and Senator Rest has this bill moving on its own, and it's in rules right now. And if we keep this in our document, we're going to be headed off to rules too. So we're going to jettison this because we don't want to go to rules.
Okay. Senator Murphy,
we're nice people. We're friendly.
You and I have talked about this. That's easily done. Apparently, there's another section of the bill that might also necessitate going to rules that I wasn't aware of when we talked earlier. You have an LCC or an LAC section?
Mr. Chairman, we do, and if the chair of the Rules Committee wants our bill in the Rules Committee over that, I guess we'll have to go, but that one's not coming out of the bill because those changes in that structure actually need to happen. And what Senator Cohn is talking about is there's this advisory council that or committee that gets together when there's some changes that need to be made in some of the spending that MnDOT would do. Normally, what MnDOT does is they come over and they say, "Hey, here's what we want to do. Is that okay?" Everybody signs off a letter. It's fine. What we did was we added the ranking minority members of both the Senate and House Transportation Committees to that. And, you know, to give the minority members, you know, so that they have the same information as everybody else. And Senator Pogemiller wants the bill in his committee for that. I guess we go, but I'd rather not take that out. Mr. Chairman, I'd move the A3.
Okay, we have Senator Murphy's motion relative to the A3 amendment. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, we have the A5 amendment, and I'm going to let Ms. Berezovsky kind of go through this. Some of it's technical, and some of it is changes. So,
Ms. Berezovsky.
Mr. Chair and members, I'll go down line by line on the A5 amendment. The first line, page 21, delete lines 16 and 17. This is superfluous language, and it's not needed. It's in the gas tax indexing section. Page 24, line 2 and line 3. The changes there relate to the metro sales tax. There's a provision in the bill that provides that MnDOT cannot vary more than 2% of its trunk highway expenditures in the metro area when the local sales tax is in force. And the changes here on these lines would say that MnDOT can spend more than a 2% variation in the metro area, but it cannot drop down below 2% less than what it has been spending in the metro. Pages, all those changes on page 34 reflect a change that you'll hear more about in Article 1, where the way the bill is currently constructed, there are subtractions off the top of the motor vehicle lease sales tax, which is being spent for transportation in this bill. And there's a phase-in, and the way it's constructed now is one-time general fund spending is taken off the top of the lease sales tax revenues. This removes those subtractions, and those expenditures are going to be treated as just regular one-time appropriations and possibly part of another bill, I'm understanding. But so this takes them out of the sales tax. Lines 1.11 to 1.16 is CASA language. This was inadvertently dropped. It's minimum county language. It should have been in the bill originally. Lines 1.17 and 1.19, again, are just technical changes that were suggested by finance to, in the interest of accuracy. Page line 1.18, deleting on page 49, sections 1 and 3. That removes the Transportation Endowment Fund. That was an initiative of Senator Rest that would have captured 25% of future surpluses for an endowment fund for transportation. Line, let's see. Okay, 1.20 to 1.22 is an initiative of Senator Dibbles that is being deleted. It's a statewide initiative for transit for disabled. And it's being deleted because its cost, we just got the fiscal note, and its cost far exceeds our ongoing general fund spending targets. 1.23 is just a technical correction. 1.24 is also part of the disability transit program that's being deleted. 1.25 changes an effective date, and the current effective date is immediately after enactment. And what this does, this change would keep Hiawatha LRT operations status quo for the rest of the fiscal year. It's currently the operating costs are split between the Hennepin County and the Met Council. And without changing this language, it would have let the Hennepin County off the hook yet in this fiscal year. So as of under this bill, as of July 2007, the Met Council takes over the full cost of operating Hiawatha LRT.
That's it for the A5 amendment, Mr. Chairman. I'd move the A5 amendment.
Okay, Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Murphy, on the amendment lines 11 and 16, would you change such to the?
Yes.
It's just word usage. It's no substantive change.
I would incorporate that, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. All right, further discussion on the A5 amendment. If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Pearson.
Senator Fredrickson did not note on line 116 such as they are also.
Senator Pearson, I did. I referenced them both. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't hear the second reference that you made.
Okay. Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, now we have the A6 amendment. And Mr. Chairman, this relates to the metro sales tax, and it just redistributes the metro sales tax provisions in the manner that the bill left Senator Dibble's subcommittee.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
I'll move that amendment. Oh, Senator Murphy can move it, too. I'll move it.
Okay.
Somebody moving the amendment? Senator Pappas. All right, we have the A6 amendment in front of us. Okay, further discussion on the A6 amendment?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Neville.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the explanation. What does this do?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Neville, this amendment would put the language the way that our transit subcommittee had originally had it. After this bill came through committee, we changed it for what I believe was the let's just say that this is going to correct the situation so that the balance of the bill remains the way that we need it to be to actually pass a bill. And Senator Neville, putting together a transportation package is, I'm not going to describe it as Representative Earhart did, but it's like squeezing a balloon. You squeeze it in the middle, it starts popping out the top and the bottom. And pretty soon, if you keep doing that enough, you lose all your support. What this amendment does is it puts it back so that the transit money is spent in such a manner that is appropriate, and that there is a clear cut division between road money and transit money in the metro area.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Sir Neville,
just to state it explicitly, what this does then is it takes that motor vehicle sales tax, and it looks like it puts 75% to transit. No?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Neville, this is the sales tax portion of the bill. Metro sales tax.
Just the metro sales tax. So 75% of that would go to transit, and 20% to what? To roads?
20% to roads and 5% for bikeways and pedestrian ways.
Okay.
And the reason why we split it up like that, and I believe that it was based on some sound logic, was that transit in the metropolitan area, roads are, we're already getting a lot of money for the roads through the gas tax initiative and some of the other things that are in the bill. Transit in the metropolitan area needs a huge kickstart, and this split will solidify that kickstart. To buy these trains and rail is a very expensive endeavor, and unless we have enough money to match that the federal money that is available from time to time, you know, then we back up. We keep backing up. We saw it with the Hiawatha line, and we got backed up. And then North Star, we got backed up because we didn't have a pot of money to draw from. This establishes our goal, and that is to build a transit system, a transportation system in the state of Minnesota, or at least in the metropolitan area, that's state-of-the-art. And this keeps the balance between roads and transit the way that we had envisioned it when we started this. So,
Mr. Chairman, Senator Murphy, or maybe Senator Dibble, when we talk about the whole list of all the transit corridors that are to be funded here, why isn't the Central Corridor listed?
Senator Dibble.
Or operating dollars for the Hiawatha Corridor, for that matter.
Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, I think those things that are enumerated are for study purposes, those things that are in the very, very early phases, kind of on the drawing boards.
I'm sorry. I missed that. Thank you.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Pappas, if we could have named the Central Corridor here and had a couple $100 million, we would have put her in the bill. So. Along with the Union Depot.
Senator Neville.
Mr. Chair, as long as we're on transit, and I understand this is obviously more of a metro issue than Greater Minnesota, was there any discussion this year about personal rapid transit, or are we still just talking expansion of the light rail transit?
Mr. Chairman, I'll let Senator Dibble answer that.
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair and Senator Neville, we'll be happy to know that Senator Olson, K. carries the torch for personal rapid transit. She brings it up quite a bit, and we've had a lot of personal conversations. There's been no specific proposal that came forward for the purposes of this bill, but I did commit to her to make a field trip out to the
model.
Yeah, to the was it Taxi 2000 site, yeah. And so we continue to kick the idea around. But I'm not familiar with any proposals that came forward. I didn't see any, or at least none that received a hearing request.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Okay. And Mr. Chairman, that's it on the A6 amendment.
Mr. Chairman. Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Murphy, essentially what you're doing is taking away discretion from this Joint Powers Board on all the money except 5%, because you're saying no less than 75% for transit, no less than 20% for roads. Mm-hmm. So those two can't go down. That's 95% of the funds. The only funds over which they have discretion is 5%.
That's for bicycles.
Well, that's for bicycles. Why is that a good? Why don't we just let the Joint Powers Board make that decision down the road? You know, maybe they would allocate it as you have indicated.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Frederickson, maybe they would, maybe they wouldn't. We really didn't want to take that chance, and you know, we're the ones that are taking the vote on this bill, and I firmly believe that if we're going to have the political courage to go ahead and pass a bill that's this large, and we want to designate the money to go to where the vision, where we see the vision, then I think we should. I know that there were some members who didn't like the division that we're putting back in the bill. But like I said, we're the ones that are, you know, making the tough decisions here. And I still feel, and talking with a lot of the business folks from the metropolitan area, one group in particular, that they want to spend all the money on transit, because they know that, like in downtown Minneapolis, about 40% of the people on a daily basis use some sort of transit component to get to and from work. And right now, we don't have enough options available. And we know why those 40% do that. One, they're tired of sitting in the parking lot called 94 or 394, wherever it is. Two, parking is more expensive than buying a bus pass. So we're trying to give that other 60% of people who more than likely commute in and out of the metropolitan area to and from work, we're trying to give them more options. Because right now, you know, if you get on a bus early in the morning, just about any bus headed into the city, it's full. Just about any transit option that you can think of heading into the city in the morning is full. And same thing when businesses let off work. They're full going home. And, you know, that was one of the things that came out loud and clear in the discussions that Senator Dibble held, was that we need more transit options. And we're not above, and I've talked with Senator Dibble about this, maybe saying that, you know, after a 5 or 8 year period, this would be revisited or recalculated. But for the time being, we want to make sure that our intentions are known, that that we need some serious work on transit in the metro area.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Senator Dibble.
Thank you. As it is, the bill as it's currently in front of you, 85% of the dollars are not flexible. They go to roads. You know? So, you know, if we want to have a discussion about flexibility, you know, I think we could have a much more expansive discussion about flexibility. I think there's a growing recognition that transit is not an afterthought or an also-ran. That's an integral part of our transportation system, and we need to come to grips with that. The goal of this bill is to advance the Metro Council 2030 plan to 2020, which it was at one time, until we started running into kind of the lack of ability and will to raise the kind of money we need for transit operations and capital. And let me just mention to folks that the 2030 plan, which we hope to become the 2020 plan again, doesn't even begin to start to get at funding for a whole bunch of things, a lot of those things that are in the list that Senator Pappas was citing. It doesn't study or you know, doesn't study or implement any ideas for transit along I-394, along I-494, along I-35W, the Fridley station that people say they want, the extension of the North Star corridor that would go up to all the way up to St. Cloud and beyond, Senator Metzen's Robert Street transitway. You know, the region is really starting to articulate, and I think these town hall meetings and these hearings that we had out in the field showed us that folks all over the place, we saw the article in the paper over the weekend, the southwest portion of this region was somewhat adverse to the idea of transit serving its needs. Now it's clamoring for that southwest corridor. So even if we were to dedicate 100% of the sales tax in the metro area for this purpose, it wouldn't even begin to. It would start to get at the 2030 plan that's on the shelf right now, but it wouldn't even begin to get at what the full range of need is, as we found out in these trips around the region.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Murphy, this is the first time I've seen this bill. I have not been in discussions about this section. It just strikes me as strange that the metropolitan counties can impose a half-cent sales tax, provided they enter into a joint powers agreement. And the way the bill came in, they would then have a fair amount of flexibility as to how they would fund that joint how they would allocate that money within some restrictions. And essentially, we're taking that discretion away from them with your amendment. Mm-hmm. And I essentially agree with you on the need for transit. I'm not making that argument at all. It's the way this money is the way the decision is being made as to how to allocate the money after the counties. We require the counties to form the joint powers agreement before they impose the sales tax. That's my point.
No, and Mr. Chairman and Senator Fredrickson, I understand where you're coming from. You know, in MnDOT, we provide, we have the base level of appropriation, and we tell them spend it for roads. And then they decide which roads to go out and spend it on. What we're doing here is we're saying spend 70% of this money on transit, and then, you know, the Joint Powers Board is going to figure out exactly what the most effective lines are, and they're going to fund them. So we're not taking all of their discretion away. We're just saying that, you know, 70% of this is going to be spent on, 75% of it is going to be spent on transit. You know, we do that throughout the bill when we start cutting up the money. I mean, you know, the counties, you're going to get this pot, and cities, you're going to get this pot of money. But, you know, we don't tell those folks how to spend it, just that, okay, that's road money. You got to spend it on roads and fix your roads. And that's what we're doing here. At 75% of that money is for transit, fix it up. So, Mr. Chairman, I would renew Senator Pappas's motion.
Senator Murphy, you would renew Senator Pappas?
She should renew her own.
Well, I'm trying to move it along here.
Senator Anderson.
Whose motion was
it? It's your motion.
Senator Pappas appreciates
please
the help.
Redoing
Senator Anderson.
Motion.
Thank you, Mr.
Here
Chair.
It is.
Senator Murphy or Senator Dibble, whoever wants to answer, what's the timing of this metro sales tax taking effect? And I'm just wondering, in light of the projects that are already ongoing, whether it would affect those. How soon would this take effect under your bill, Senator Murphy?
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, right away.
Right
we would,
away.
We would enact the tax this year yet.
Okay. So as soon
July
as
July 1st?
Mr. Chair, as soon as the legislature passed it, it would be effective July 1st,
yeah.
Like other tax bills? Okay.
But and then what's your question?
That was my question.
Oh. You had a second part? Would it affect
thinking
ongoing?
Thinking of my Senator second
Anderson.
Question. Yeah. I don't have another question. I guess I just want to speak in support of this amendment. I think from the perspective of metropolitan area legislators, we really, it's hard to think about, we spend property taxes on our transit system. We use sales taxes and gas taxes. We contribute those like everybody in the whole state does. But, you know, I think the only way that we can justify moving forward with this sales tax for that the metropolitan area only will have to pay is if it does the job on transit that we haven't been able to do with state dollars. So I think it's really critical.
One final
Senator
point,
Dibble.
Mr. Chair. So, you know, if we do succeed at passing this amendment and passing this bill into law, and advance, you know, and restore the 2020 nature of what was once the 2020 plan that's now the 2030 plan. Much of those funds could also be used for capital. The 2030 plan, even as it is now, presumes that we're going to be able to mount the political ability, the political will to occupy huge chunks, a lot of space in Senator Langseth's bill every couple of years. You know, and that's a huge assumption. And then if we succeed at doing that, it also presumes that then we'll also have the funds raised and programmed to pay for the operating of all these beautiful things that we build all over the metropolitan area. This takes a lot of that it introduces a lot more certainty into what we could be doing, which, you know, is the, which we all agree is a great vision, that the 2030 plan.
All right, we've got the A6 amendment in front of us. Is there further discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Parisot.
Mr. Chairman, I've just been looking at all. This is. Did you ever find a tax increase you didn't like, Senator Murphy, that you just didn't love to death?
I can't
believe how many increases are in this bill.
Mm-hmm. Well, Senator Parisot, we're on the A6 amendment.
That's part of it there. That's telling you how you're going to spend it after you've got it in the bill.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Parisot, you know, the comment that I made on the floor the other day is that's what I told people when I was at their doorstep that, you know, that asked for things. And I said, well, the budget's pretty tight. If you want that, we're going to have to raise taxes. They were, you know, for the most part, they were like, okay, if that improves our school, that's fine. If you're going to fill in the pothole out in front of my house, that's fine. Take a little more money. Senator Parisot, I think that you would be surprised, and Senator Dave was sitting there, and he put rough numbers together and then added in the number that I gave him on the average for the sales tax expenditure, and it came out to, you know, about $550 more in transportation costs for an average family of four in Minnesota.
That's for the and, statewide average.
You know, if you take the if you take the $700+ a year in added costs that we have currently through car repair, increase in, or, you know, your mileage goes way down when you're sitting in traffic and just burning up gas and not going anyplace. The time that you lose at the job site, the time you lose your family, you add all that up, and it's someplace north of $700. So if you take that $700 you're losing and apply that $500 that you're going to spend, it looks like a savings to me. So I think that this bill is actually going to save us money. Besides that, Senator Parisot, I know the district that you represent, and about 33% of all the property taxes that your property taxpayers pay go to roads and bridges in your district. And, you know, if we want
Mr.
to ever
Chairman,
make an
they're
impact.
They're increasing by hundreds of dollars a year.
Senator Parisot, could we wait for Senator Murphy to finish?
As we sit here.
And if we want to make an impact on our property taxes, we have to start being honest with people and saying that, you know, we shouldn't be paying for transportation services through property taxes, because that's not the right way to do it. If you're out using the road and you're driving and you're burning gasoline, you're paying at the right place, the pump, because you chose to drive. But for the lady that lives next door to me who walks every day down to the church and back, she doesn't use the road very much. Why should her property taxes continue to go up because we don't have the wherewithal to fund our roads and bridges in the state?
Further discussion on the A6 amendment? If not, all is in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Sales tax.
A7. All right. Mr. Chairman, we've got the A7 amendment, and there's something that we need to add here on lines 1.2, and it's just a technical change. It says page 25. That should read page 25 and 26. And then further down the line, it says subdivisions 1 and 2. That should say 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Okay, Senator Murphy, this is the A7 amendment?
This is the A7 amendment, Mr. Chairman.
So you're incorporating those?
I would incorporate those. Those are just some references throughout the bill.
Mr. Watson?
Mr. Chairman, I think there's one other change. I want to confer with Ms. Berezovsky on this. On line 1.10, where it refers to the jurisdiction of the taxing authority, should we be talking about within the metropolitan transportation area?
Mr. Chairman, if Mr. Watson wants to make that part of the – I'll make that part of the motion.
Okay. And, Senator Murphy, I'm going to ask you to repeat the entirety of the amendment so the clerk can get it.
Okay. On 1.2, after 25, insert and 26. And then it should – the rest of it should read – delete subdivisions 1, 2, 3, and 4. And insert whatever.
Okay, was there anything else you were incorporating into the amendment?
The changes that Mr. Watson had proposed.
Okay, Mr. Watson, can you repeat those?
Mr. Chairman, that's on line 1.10, delete jurisdiction of the taxing authority and insert metropolitan transportation area.
Oh, you mean a big one, wouldn't you? Okay, Senator Murphy, was there anything else that?
Nope, that's
okay. It. Okay, then with this amendment, Senator Dibble, you've been involved with the promulgation of this amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair. What this amendment does is it makes more consistent a couple of ideas that were that we had in the bill. Makes them more consistent with each other. The half-cent metro-wide sales tax is established, and then the joint powers is established. And then the joint powers board voting representation is established. This is an idea that came forward from quite a few parties, the idea of establishing the joint powers board for the purpose of planning and programming this money. That gets raised in the metropolitan area is a pretty strong principle that folks had. It was a little inconsistent, though, to establish the metropolitan area sales tax, but then call for a joint powers to come into existence that was subject to some internal negotiation, which may or may not ever happen. Meanwhile, the tax was being collected, and this joint powers board may or may not exist. So we established a joint powers board, and then. One of the factors that we had called for it to be subject to negotiation was a weighting factor in terms of the voting on that joint powers board. So we establish how that is going to exist exactly. Each county represented on the joint powers board would have a minimum of 5% a weighting factor, and then the remaining 65% would be divvied up according to the relative amounts that are contributed by each county to the overall tax that's collected.
Right, we have the A7 amendment in front of us, Senator Parisot.
Mr. Chairman, I note that on the Joint Powers Board, which you were just talking about, Senator Dibble, that you have representative of each county specified, mm-hmm. and you have one from each city, city representatives from each county. Yes. However, what about the townships? These are people who are taxed and paying the freight and don't have representation on the Joint Powers Board. Shouldn't there be some provision in there for townships in the separate counties of the metro area, since we all have some?
Mr. Chair, I believe the goal was to make sure that there's one representative from a county and then one representative from a municipality, and there's nothing that precludes a township from being named, at the gathering that's convened within their county to the Joint Powers Board. The city representatives designated from statutory and home rule charter cities or towns located in the county, so that would include the townships.
Mr. Chair.
Sir Neville.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, how many, there are seven counties, how many cities are there? That each get 2.5%?
Many in some of the small.
Pardon?
Right. There would, Mr. Chair, there would only be one city representative from each county. The city representatives would be selected from among their peers. It's not each. It's not going to be a cast of 1,000 or the Roman Senate.
Representatives of each county and each city shall each have a vote.
Well, so maybe I could call in Mr. Watson.
Mr. Chairman, I think to be consistent with what Senator Dibble wants to do, on line 17, after city, in both places it appears, insert or town. So it's one elected city or town official and the city or town representative.
Mr. Chairman, we incorporate that with our amendment.
Okay.
Okay. Sir Neville.
Just before we vote on this, as long as we're on that topic, I see on the spreadsheet that the half-cent sales tax that this would deal with is about $424 million over a biennium. How much does that wheelage tax, the $20, I don't see that on the spreadsheet.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Neville, we could figure that out here, but not every county is going to impose that right off the top. But if they do, that's $174 million.
Okay, I guess I was. I'm sorry, not wheelage. I meant there's an excise tax.
There's lots of taxes.
Isn't that something that's unique just to the metro part? A $20 per vehicle excise tax.
Well,
price tax is important. Yeah, $20 per vehicle. Line 1.8 and 1.9. That's not the wheelage tax, is it? So how much does that excise tax? And does that show up on the spreadsheet somewhere?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Neville, Ms. Boyd is telling me that is included in the total.
Okay. So on the spreadsheet, the half-cent sales tax, that includes also the $20 excise tax?
Right. And Mr. Chair? The purpose for that item in the language is so that we're not adding the half-cent sales tax to cars as well.
You are not?
Not. They're exempt.
They're not.
Okay.
Okay. Mr. Chairman and Senator Neville, this might be the number you're looking for. In the 08, the sales tax would be $194 million, and the $20 fee that you're talking is $2.8 million.
Oh, okay.
And then if you add them together, then you get the $197. So
okay, thank you.
Ms. Boyd's pretty good with numbers here and has all the paperwork. So.
Yes.
Right. Mr. Chairman, I move the A7 amendment.
All right, we have the A7 amendment in front of us. Is there further discussion? Mr. Watson.
Mr. Chairman, one other or town I missed on line 23. After city, insert or town.
We would make that part of the motion.
All right. With that change, we have the A7 amendment in front of us. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion carries.
Mr. Chair, apparently line 28 has or town, city or town.
Right.
All right. Senator Betzold, we've already adopted the A7 amendment. That change to the previously adopted A7 amendment language. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Murphy.
Thanks. Mr. Chairman, I have one oral amendment, and this was just something that happened to get dropped out, and Senator Metzen brought this to our attention. But it's on page 27 of the bill, line 15. If we could delete and on line 17 before the semicolon, insert the Roman numeral for 8 and then, you know, the parentheses, Robert Street corridor between the Union Depot Concourse Multimodal Transit Hub in St. Paul and County Road 42 in Rosemont. We've got this written here on a piece of paper. We'll pass it up. But basically what this is this is the study languages that we've the study language for all these projects that are kind of ready to have a serious hard look at them. And and Senator Metzen has carried legislation, I think, the past 2 years for Robert Street Corridor. We had it in our bill last year, and, of course, that bill went down in a—well, it didn't pass. So that just institute—that would just insert Senator Metzen's bill.
All right. So are you moving that, Senator Murphy, or Senator Metzen moving that?
That's right.
Senator Murphy moves that language change. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Murphy.
And, Mr. Chairman, we have the A4 amendment, and that's the delete all on Article 1. Article 1 is the portion of the bill that has all the numbers in it, and since we just did these changes, we have to carry them in Article 1.
Senator Murphy, I'm sorry, it hasn't been distributed yet. Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, if we could adopt the A4 amendment, then I'll start going through it and...
Mr. Chair?
Sir,
so this will be the bill then? It says delete everything after the enacting clause.
That's only in regard to Article 1, Senator Betzel.
Okay.
Okay, so Senator Murphy, are you incorporating that? Delete everything?
Just Article 1.
Okay. So you're substituting, you're deleting everything and then are deleting everything and put delete Article 1?
But you want to keep the rest of the articles.
Everything in Article 1.
So replace Article 1.
Okay. I tell you what, Mr. Watson, what?
Mr. Chairman, page 1, line 2, delete, quote, everything after the enacting clause, quote, and insert Article 1. So it says delete Article 1 and insert.
Okay. Senator Murphy?
That's fine.
Okay.
Whatever.
All right. So, Senator Murphy, do you want this amendment adopted, or do you want to indicate what's in the amendment?
I'll go through it right now. All right. Mr. Chairman, as you can see, that the total numbers there are between 1.9 and 1.16. These are the appropriations that will be made to those funds. The CASA-MASA formula, highway user, trunk highway, that's our gas tax money. Going through the bill, I'll just hit some of the other parts. There's Airport Development Assistance Fund on page 2. These are funds that are already in statute, and these are just the levels of funding. Aviation Support Services on page 3, along with some language for rail. There's that's where it starts on the bottom of that page for state highways. It goes over on page 5 and continues with state road construction. There is one part down in the bottom there. It starts on page 5, line 30, that talks about cable median barriers. This is part of the safety initiative that we've tried to continue here in the state of Minnesota. This past year we had fewer fatalities on our roads than the year before. That's a trend we want to keep. We know that cable median barriers work, and we want to fund that. Page 6, it talks about the highway debt service. This is just a debt service that we pay from year to year on our bonding program. There's also some operations and maintenance money. Going on to page 7, it starts with the county state aids and the municipal state aids.
moving along to page 8, talks about some, you know, some appropriations for buildings, the normal transfers that are normally made. Then it goes on to talk on page 9 about other construction appropriations, some contingent appropriations. Page 10 starts with Section 4 with the Metropolitan Council and the money that they receive on an annual basis. Also on page 10 is the public safety provision. And inside that is the governor's recommendation to have a security coordinator for the 2008 Republican National Convention. That starts on page 11, line 17. There's also on page 13, there's, you know, as I spoke in my opening remarks, you know, appreciated the governor putting forth 40 new troopers and keeping the 80-plus troopers that are going to retire soon, you know, keeping those billets so that we can fill them. That money is carried there on page 13 for the 40 state troopers. There's also a section in here to for some of the capital security. Driver and vehicle services is on the next page, starting on page 14. Traffic safety, pipeline safety. We always have, you know, these tort claims that have to get paid. That's on page 15. There's also language in here, and I believe that this is another Senator Metzen's initiative about the Lafayette Bridge. Making sure that when we go to design that, that it's compatible for rail service or some other transit service.
Nine was taken out.
Yep, Section 9 of this is the Airport Funding Advisory Task Force. We ripped that out of the bill, and that takes us over to Section 10. This is an inner section that the money is laying out there. The city of Rochester is going to pay for it. Senator St. John and Lynch both had requested this be put in the bill, and so there it is. And Section 11 is just the spending authority for the federal funds.
Okay. Thanks, Senator Murphy. Let me just make a comment to members that one of the other things
we... Okay. And Mr. Chairman, I would move in my motion to remove Section 9 from this to be consistent with what we talked about earlier.
Okay. And let me just make a comment to members that... one of the things that obviously we carry in all the bills is compensation, a compensation increase for state employees. I think, Senator Murphy, what you had intended to do was to take the forecasted amount for the MVEST leased car transfer and take that surplus from that account, use that against the general fund compensation increase. And we're just a small amount over target, but we believe we can compensate for that with one of the other bills coming through later in the week. And so we'll carry it for the time being and then add to the target at the appropriate time. But I think that balance and one of the fiscal analysts can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that amount out of balance is $66,000, I think. Does that sound? So we'll take care of that with the other bill, one of the other bills coming through.
Okay.
And we can balance that against against that, and then reflect that in that slight increase in the target. So we've got the A4 amendment in front of us. Is there further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move to the portion of the bill now. It starts on page 20. And I'll start with Article 2, and that's the fuel tax. Members, this is the bottom line is on line 22. It increases the fuel tax from 20 to 30 cents. The two lines before that are what you do with the M85 and E85 rates. And then Section 3 is the annual adjustment. This does have indexing in it so that much like the state of Wisconsin did back in 1988 was they indexed their gas tax, and that's why their gas tax right now is 11, 12 cents higher than it is in the state of Minnesota. Article 3 talks about the vehicle registration tax.
This is the portion of the bill that we cut under the Ventura years. This is the one portion that continues to grow with time. And, you know, we cut it basically in half under the Ventura years. We're going to get about, with these changes, we get about half of that cut back. Members, it's important to note that what you pay today on your car is what you're going to pay tomorrow and next year and the year after, as long as you don't trade it in. Once you trade in your vehicle and get another vehicle, you're going to be placed on the new schedule, and you're going to pay more. If you buy a high-end car and it's brand new, you're going to pay, I wouldn't say a lot more, but you're going to pay substantially more than you pay now. If you buy a car that's 5 years old, you're going to pay a little bit more than what you pay now, but it's not going to be outrageous, in my opinion. Page 23 starts the local sales tax portion of the bill. And it also, it's pretty self-explanatory. It goes on. Page 25 is the local transportation sales and excise tax. This is specific to the seven-county metropolitan area. Moving along on page 27 are all those projects that we want to study and get them queued up and get ready to go. Page 28 is what we talked about earlier with the county wheelage tax. It just removes the offset, makes all counties the same so that they're not getting penalized for doing that. Page 30 starts with Article 6. And this is the motor vehicle sales tax and motor vehicle lease tax portion of the bill. It talks about, it first establishes a couple of funds for transit, one in Greater Minnesota and one in the metropolitan area. You'll find those on page 31. And then on page 32, there's a sales tax exemption for commuter rail and light rail. This was something that came to light. Mr. Schreiber brought it to our attention, and he's been working with the North Star folks quite extensively. But they had already figured this money into the projections that they gave the federal government. And, you know, I don't know how this slipped through the cracks in the years past, but moving forward, we want to treat all rail the same. So that whether it's commuter rail or light rail, it's, you know, these the portions of material supplies and equipment that are in this bill will be exempt moving forward, and it'll be clear. On page 34 is the this is where the motor vehicle lease tax breaks down. Members, you're going to see different numbers starting on lines on line 11 on page 34 as it moves through this progression. The reason those numbers change is to keep that balance between roads and transit at an appropriate level. But I want to draw your attention down to line 33 and 34 and a little bit on the next page that talks about after July 1st of 2011. So now you're into the 2012 fiscal year. That's where you need to kind of focus your attention, because in 2012, all these funds will be phased in, and that's the true, basically that's the true measure of the bill. And that's for the lease tax. If you flip back a few more pages on page 38, you'll see a lot of the same language that you saw earlier, but now this is for the invest funds. This is the hard 60-40 split, and what happens with that 40% and that 60%, and it's all spelled out in black and white. And once again, down on lines 34, 35, and then on to the next page are the percentages as would be paid in once it's fully implemented in 2012. Article 7 on page...
Mr. Chair, who's chairing?
Chair,
can I ask a question?
Senator
Murphy.
Senator Neville.
On the MVEST breakdown after 2011, 36% of the transit goes to the metro and 4% to Greater Minnesota.
How did you come up with that split?
Senator Dibble?
Mr. Chairman, I'll let Senator Dibble take that one.
That's combined with the some of the revenue that's raised from the leased vehicles, and it was important.
Well, no, this is the invest?
Correct. Correct. So the concept, I should say, is defined. Okay. It was important to figure out exactly how much. We started with the need. You know, what was the need articulated by Greater Minnesota Transit, and they need to raise about $30 million more. Right now, they're getting very, very little, and even that which they're getting is insufficient for their purpose. As a matter of fact, a good portion of the budgets that they submit go unrecognized. We have seven counties in Greater Minnesota that receive no transit service whatsoever. There are tremendous capital and operating needs, and so you know, frankly, we you know, with the half-cent metro sales tax that's raised, in combination with the MVEST funds that are raised, in combination with a small part of the leased vehicle funds that are raised, the metro transit needs are pretty well taken care of. So that allowed a little more room in the MVEST source, combined with some additional funds from the leased vehicle sales, created that ability to make that split.
Well, Senator Neville.
Mr. Chair, I was going to, I guess I'm trying to advocate for more than 4% for Greater Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And I guess what I'm wondering is if this right now would be, nine times or one-ninth in Greater Minnesota versus Metro. Is that about what it is? Oh, I'm sorry, it'd be one-tenth. Is that about what the breakdown is right now?
Senator Murphy?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Neville, here's kind of a graph. I don't know if you can see it. I'll send it over to you. But this is Greater Minnesota. You know, we're kind of calculating all the lease tax and invest money. And it comes out to about 5%, which is $30 million. And we heard loud and clear that $30 million was about where the need was. And might have gave them a couple more dollars, but $30 million was definitely going to cover the need in Greater Minnesota. 36% of that is for the metro area. That gets that number up to 230, and then this is the road money. That's 59% of these combination of the two funds, and that's $377 million. And you have to remember that this number is before you apply the half-cent sales tax, and this number is before you apply the gas tax to it. So this is just those two funds that we were talking about right here.
Well, compared to the current breakdown of what we spend for transit, mm-hmm. is this more or less?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Murphy.
Senator Neville, it's more. It's not only on a dollar-for-dollar basis, but on a percentage basis. Greater Minnesota gets I believe that we get a pretty fair shake.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and members, starting on page 39 is Article 7, and this is the changes to the county state aid distribution fund. And I'd mentioned earlier when Senator Arata and I went through this rigmarole of trying to put together a bill, the one thing that we found out that there wasn't much agreement on was changes to the CASA formula. I mean, metro and suburban legislators feel very strongly that those CASA changes should be on all the money, and it should happen right away. And in Greater Minnesota, we're saying no changes at all, none at all. We're going to leave that formula just the way it is. We sent the folks out, and a couple months later, they came back with unanimous support throughout the counties with this change. So I can say it. I'm looking around the room, and I don't see anybody shaking their head and disagreeing, but this is agreed on with all 87 counties. That's Article 7. Article 8 is the driver and vehicle services portion of the bill. That starts on page 41. These are recommendations that came from the department and the governor. What we've been trying to do is try to take more and more of our money that is supposed to be used for roads and bridges and transit projects and keep it there and spend less and less of that money on some of these things like driver and vehicle services. A couple years back, the governor had asked them, what's it going to take to be a fee-based system inside of DVS? And this is the result of that. This changes a lot of their fees. You'll see that some of them are, they're all going up. All those fees are going up a little bit, and that's to pay for that department. So they'll be hopefully fully funded through their fees.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Neville?
Senator Murphy, let me ask you a question, go back to Section 2. And this just is, I'm asking the question because I don't have much background on this, but 50% of the new gas tax will be apportioned based upon, the percentage that its money needs bear to the sum of the money needs of the individual. Of the individual counties. How are you going to determine? I'm on page, line 41.7. What does that mean? How do you determine what the money needs are of each county?
That's funny, the word money needs.
Well, Senator Murphy.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I could get one of the MnDOT folks up here maybe to.
Is the commissioner?
But this is.
Is the commissioner here?
No, I don't think
so. I don't see her.
But.
Well, and Mr. Chair, incidental, I believe the A5 amendment added some language there too.
Is this for Senator just Neville? The state roads, or is this? These are for the county roads, aren't they?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Neville, this is the county state aid formula.
Okay.
And this, like I said, this is the formula that was agreed upon by all the counties, and this was language that was worked out with MnDOT. And
it's in the current.
So I'm just trying to understand what it means.
Senator Neville.
And Mr. Chairman and Senator Neville, this is, current law is, you have 50% dedicated towards needs, or 50% is weighted towards needs. So,
and needs is defined as lane miles.
Senator
Chairman. Now you're getting into
Chairman.
Maybe Ms. Boyd can.
Ms. Boyd, would you help clarify this issue?
Mr. Chair and members,
most of us are talking from a lack of knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, Ms. Beerzofsky is going to get the statute book, but it's current. That's current law already.
Okay.
And we could.
So, Mr. Chair, in determining what the total money needs are, is it the DOT then who makes that? That's kind of their sign off? The counties have to submit it
to
the DOT?
Do we have somebody here that can speak to that?
Well, Mr. Chairman, they're over there nodding their head yes, but they're not fighting to get to the bat rack here.
Okay.
If I was pitching, there'd be all kinds of people lined up waiting to get. But, all right.
Please give your name for the record.
I'm Scott Peterson with MnDOT, and I'm not really an expert in this area, but our state aid office does maintain the database on which this needs calculation is made. And my understanding is that the needs formula is roughly produces a number which is an estimate of the amount of money that would be required to bring the state aid system up to the current standards, and the standards are those that define like the lane width and the carrying capacity of the road surface, things of that nature. So it forms a basis upon which then the revenue that comes into the state aid system is allocated. And that's approximately how much I know about it.
Yeah, Mr.
Chair.
Senator Neville.
So there's no disagreement about what that means, and everybody's signed off.
No, that's a well, Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Peterson,
Senator Neville, that's a well-established concept within the state aid community, I would say.
That's good enough.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Frederick.
Chairman, Mr. Peterson, am I correct, remembering my days as a county commissioner, aren't the county engineers involved in that assessment also?
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Frederickson, that could be. I honestly don't know the answer to that question.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator
I can because it talks that these standards are developed cooperatively by the commissioner and county engineers.
Okay.
Okay. We want to move on, Senator Murphy.
Okay, we were through Section 8, which is the changes to DVS. Article 9 is the trunk highway bonding program, and in this bill, we're going to the governor asked to authorize, I believe it was $150 million worth of bonding a year over a 10-year construction cycle, and we're authorizing up to $200 million of trunk highway bonds per year for that construction cycle. And in Article 9, starting on page 47, it establishes a means by which we pay for it, because once the debt service goes above a certain level, starting on page 48, lines 3, we build trigger mechanisms in. And so, Senator Paraso, this is it triggers a gas tax increase to pay for the bonds.
Notice we're having increases.
So it's more increases, right. Yes, Senator Paraso. The reason why this is a preferable, what I believe is a preferable option to taking it out of the maintenance or construction budget, this actually pays for itself. Right away, this money collected at the gas pump has to be applied to the Trunk Highway User Distribution Fund, which 62% of that dollar is going to go to retire the debt service. The rest of it, 29%, goes to the counties, 9% goes onto the MSAH formula. So this not only provides the commissioner the ability to buy high-dollar items like fixing the crosstown, for example, but it also provides more money for our local jurisdictions who are increasingly relying upon the property tax. At the peak of this program, it would mean 8.67 cents of additional gas tax. In years three, four, and five, it ramps up to about 5 cents, kind of holds steady on that ramp, and then coming down the other side by 2029 and 2030, the mechanism starts to trip off to where it gets down into the 2 and 3 cent level. So it goes up and then comes back down automatically. And then it appropriates the rest of this is authorizing the bonds and appropriating the money. Article 10.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. Is this, Senator Murphy, is this over and above the 10-cent gas tax?
Mr. Chairman, yes, Senator Stump, it is. And I believe we built it that way on purpose to show that bonds cost money, and that's just all there is to it. If you issue trunk highway bonds, you're taken away from someplace. And we did that several years back, and I think that even MnDOT would agree that the debt service got heavy enough to where they started robbing Peter to pay Paul. And, you know, when you start taking money out of your maintenance, you know, from your maintenance endeavors, you see it right away on the roads. And so this highlights, not only do I believe it's the appropriate way to do trunk highway bonds, but it also highlights that there is no free ride. You just can't authorize bonds and not have to pay for them. It costs money someplace along the line. So the more you bond for, the less of your gas tax money at the pump you're going to have to spend on maintenance and construction unless you do a program like this. So it's rich, Senator Stump. I realize that. But, you know, the problems aren't going to go away. And like I said earlier, you know, we're facing a $1.8 billion a year problem, and we're only raising 1.1. Well, actually, a little more than that. It depends on how soon the bonds get authorized. And how fast that debt service ramps up. So I'll go along, Mr. Chairman. We took Article 10 out, didn't we?
No. Sections 1 and 3 are out. That's all.
Oh, but we didn't take Article 10 out?
Just this one section.
Sections 1 and 3 we took out. That's all. The rest.
Oh, just 1 and 3. Okay. All right.
see, where are we at here now?
Mr. Chairman, if I'll draw the committee's attention to page 50 of the bill. Page 50 talks about there's always a certain percentage of there's what we call the 5% fund in the department, and we've normally used that money for, and you can see in the bill, you know, we used it for county and municipal turnbacks and things like that. And then we've always left a portion of the money at the discretion of the commissioner. We're going to remove that discretion, and we're going to take a portion of that money. As you can see, you know, some of it still goes to the town road account, town bridge account, some to municipal turnbacks, some to county turnbacks. Those numbers are pretty standard. And then we send about 14.5% of the money to the flexible highway account. If you turn over the page, you know, these are our safety improvements. We established a safety improvement account.
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stump.
Just a quick question on Article 10. Could you just explain the Section 1?
Deleted it.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Stump, Section 1 we pulled out.
Oh,
and,
okay, that's out.
Section 3 we pulled out. Sections 1 and 3 of that article are history. And then you'll see a, you know, staying on the same subject in Section 2 here, this dock fee that goes from 50 to 75 was something that everyone around the table agreed to. So I guess it's in. But back to my point on page 51, you know, we want to continue to improve road safety in the state of Minnesota. This is one way of doing it. This safety improvement account is going to be used, you know, on the trunk highway system or grants to a statutory or home rural charter city, town, and counties to assist with paying those costs to reconstruct that 30% of the highways that I talked about earlier that have problems with them, whether it's a bad intersection or terrible lighting or whatever it may be. This fund is going to help to try to address some of those situations out there that traditionally haven't been, you know, they've been down the list a little bit. We're trying to put a pot of money together so that we bring them up. The other thing that it's going to be used for is routes of regional significance. This account was established to help a lot of our local jurisdictions that have major issues. Osseo is one. I mean, they've got like one street that runs through the middle of town, but it's so congested that nobody can move from the diner down to the bank without, you know, stopping at the bank and getting a loan to buy the gas to move that far because you just sit there. So this is created so that those roads of regional significance will have a pot of money that they can apply to get a little grant from and hopefully fix up their situation. Members on page 52, in Section 5, Subdivision 6, this World War II Memorial Donation Matching Account was established in law, and we put money in there from the Proud to be a Veteran license plate and some other avenues, put money into this account. What we're doing here is we're changing that because the World War II Memorial has been paid in full, and now this money is going to be excess and laying around. So we want to use that. We want to give that money to the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs to help with some of the programming for veterans and their families. You know, granted, it's not a wheelbarrow full of money, but every little bit is going to help, and since this memorial is built and in the process of being dedicated, we decided to keep that money for its intended purposes. And like I said, these are some of the special plate veteran plates that have paid this extra amount. On page 53, we start with a reinstatement fee. This is for drivers that kind of lost their license because they were doing something they shouldn't have been doing, like drinking and driving or whatever. This is a bill that I believe Senator Latz was carrying. It increases that fee, but it gives person that's paying it some time to pay it, because we all know that if you get a DWI anymore, it's going to cost you approximately $1,000 just to get your driver's license back. Not everybody has that laying around, and it had been in the past where you had to pay it all at once before you even got to go and sit for the test. Now we're going to kind of string that out a little bit and let people pay a little bit at a time so that folks can get their driver's license back.
Mr. Chair.
Chair Neville.
Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy, question on that section. Mm-hmm. We heard that, I believe, in the Public Safety Budget Division.
Yep.
And I know there was a fiscal note attached to it. It was probably disputed, but what do you carry it on in your budget here? Is there a fiscal note that you've funded at all for this? Looking at page 4 under Driver Vehicle Services, I'm not sure that I see it.
No, Mr. Chairman and Senator Neville, we're not carrying that right now because we're still unsure what the number is going to be. If that number gets to be outrageous, this is going to go the same way as another provision that we jettisoned earlier. Okay. You know, we don't need things weighing the bill down, but point taken, and as soon as we get the exact number, we're going to we'll either know whether we're in or out. Yeah, and we did delay it 1 year to 2008, so we got a little bit of time to take a look and see what's going on.
Charges on it after
you're. All right, thank you.
Starting on page 54 is a portion of the bill that talks about highway construction training, and it's also piggybacked on page 55 with the disadvantaged business enterprise program. These are two things that hopefully work together so that we have more people doing road construction that that aren't your typical road construction worker. Let's see, what else do we need to?
Subdivision 11.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, page 57 starts with a report on major highway projects, and this is information that MnDOT currently has, and we're just asking that they compile a report by January 15th of 2008, so this is going to give them a little bit of time to put it all together, so that we know exactly what's going on. It asks a description of the project, the history of the project, what its ranking is within that construction district, and any past or future delays or reasons for delays. This is just a report that is going to help, I believe, the Transportation Committee assess where we're at year after year after year after year. Because now we've run into transit funding.
Okay.
Okay.
So just so for committee members' benefit, section on page, excuse me, Mr. Chair, thank you. On pages 55, 56, and 57, sections 9 through 13 were deleted. Those were those disabilities paratransit provisions that turned out to cost about $130 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I believe that, but that's what the fiscal note showed. That's a lot of money.
Yeah. And then,
so Mr. Chair,
Senator Anderson,
that includes. Did you say section 10 on page 56?
Yes.
Is deleted.
Mm-hmm.
The service standards.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry to see that, because I was happy to see some standards in place for a change. Because I can't tell you how many years I've been getting complaints from my constituents about these services.
Well, Mr. Chair, my intention is to return to this subject, yet even this year, hopefully. But the fiscal note came in the last couple of days, and it was pretty overwhelming, and we need to take a look at that.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, page 58 and 59, you'll see a lot of increases in percentages. These are the unrefunded gasoline receipts that we kind of dispute from time to time. And, you know, I'm one that I don't like this. I think it's wrong, but I don't have the votes on the committee to do away with it. So next best thing is to try to mitigate some of the impact onto the Highway User Trust Fund. You see some of these percentages going up. There's a bill floating around right now that would increase from 0.15 to 0.27 the amount of unrefunded gas tax receipts to the ATV users. That equates into a number. In our bill here, you know, we jack up these percentages a little bit. And for the ATVs, we're moving from 0.15 to 0.17. That's exactly the same money, Senator Fredrickson, as the bill that's currently moving through that moves it from 0.15 to 0.27. And the reason it's the same money is that there's a lot more money here. I mean, we're raising the standard quite high. So this is exactly the same money, and I figured that if we're going to do it for the ATV guys, even though I disagree that this money comes out of the Highway User Trust Fund, in my opinion, that we're going to do it for everybody. So motorboats get a little bit more, snowmobilers get a little bit more, off-highway vehicles get a little more as well with the off-highway motorcycles, and our forest, the forest road account gets a little bit more.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, in the bill that my division just passed out today, we did not accept the governor's rec on the increased amount, and I don't know if that's this amount or not. And we funded that in a different way. Senator Chaudhry had a bill that increased registration fees for ATVs, and so we have funded the needs for ATV trails, enforcement, education, et cetera, mm-hmm. without using any new gas tax money. And so I'm not sure, I guess, I'm not sure what the number percent is that you have in here, if that reflects what we just paid for. Mm-hmm. Maybe I just gave you a gift today.
Well,
I don't know exactly, Mr. Chair.
Well, Mr. Chairman, as soon as I find out, you're either going to see an amendment in the next committee to rip this out of here or reduce it substantially. But, you know, I've never agreed with this money. You know, the Constitution's pretty clear. It says that money at the gas pump is supposed to be deposited in the Highway User Trust Fund. That Highway User Trust Fund is for roads and bridges. I don't know.
Well, and Mr.
I think anybody with a fifth grade education could probably read that and say, that's what it looks like to me. But, you know, somehow we kind of take this mythical little stretch and grab that money as it's floating from the gas pump over to the Highway User Trust Fund, and we pull a little bit off and sprinkle a little around in these areas here. Like I said, I don't agree with it, Senator Anderson, but that's the way it is. This is the exact same money that Senator Chaudhry was asking for. If you're going to fund it and carry it in your bill, then we're going to pull this out of here.
Mr. Chair, and I agree with you, and that's why we did it this way, and we actually did it in a way that I think is supported by the ATV community.
Good.
As far as I know, there's consensus support for that mechanism. So it's sort of like the snowmobile. So,
well,
anyway.
Mr. Chairman, then, well, this is a work in progress. We'll fix this up and... Anyway, I'm going to turn it over to Senator
Fredrickson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Murphy, I did want to make a comment. The distinction I would make that if you pay the gas tax, buy the gasoline, pay the gas tax, and use the highways, there's no question that should go to highways. But if you buy the gas, pay the gas tax, and then use it to plow your agricultural fields or to take it on an all-terrain vehicle trail where you're not using the highways, I think that is the distinction. And when we've done this for ATVs and also for snowmobiles, the Environment Finance Division have funded some pretty good studies as to try and determine the exact amount. We haven't just pulled the figure out of the air. I think if that were to happen, that those folks like you that watch the constitutional dedication would have a very strong case that we should not be doing that, that there should be a strong statistical basis for arriving at that percentage.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Frederson, don't get me wrong. I think that all those endeavors need to be funded, and I would always argue for more money, because the better that we maintain those trails, the less damage is done to the environment, the less we, you know, the less junk gets in our groundwater, the less junk gets in our rivers. And so I've always supported spending more money on ATV trails and, you know, the motorcycle enthusiasts, all that. It's just that, you know, I'm not going to win that debate on, especially as long as Senator Langseth is on the committee. You know, I'm not going to win. So that's why you saw the percentages change in the bill. It's kind of one of those things, you're not going to win, so get over it. So I'm over it, but I'm not done fighting, because next year I'll try again. So, and Mr. Chairman, if I might, I'm going to turn it over to Senator Dibble, and he's going to start on page 59 and work through some of the transit components.
Mr. Chair, Section 16 has to do with that portion of rail transit that is funded for by local county property taxes. A few years ago, you may recall that we suddenly didn't come up with the money that we needed to fund the operations of Hiawatha Light Rail, and it was coming online. And so kind of under the cover of darkness, it was slipped into a session law that 50% of the operations of Hiawatha Light Rail would come from locally levied property taxes from Hennepin County Regional Rail Authority property taxes. And since then, that's been perpetuated and frankly, is seems to kind of have become de facto state policy, which we think is unnecessary under the in the context of this bill and very poor public policy. So this prohibits local county property taxes from being used for the operations of rail transit. It additionally goes on to cap the contribution towards the capital portion of any given rail project to 10%. I think it's appropriate that local rail authorities or counties participate in some manner. You know, sometimes they own the land or are in a better position to assemble some of the land, and so some capital participation is appropriate, but with some parameters.
Mr. Chairman, just a question, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stone.
In your efforts looking at funding transit and looking at other communities that, you know, metropolitan areas, is it how do they fund their transit? Do they have a property tax component? I'm not a fan of property taxes, but do they have you know, what combination of fees do they use to fund it?
Mr. Chair, property tax is pretty unusual to use for transit. I actually think we might have been about the only region. Remember, in the 2001 tax bill, we eliminated the use of property taxes for transit operations. But for a little bit of levy that we do for some capital effort on a metro-wide basis, but we converted most of that to you know, general fund and some portion of motor vehicle sales tax. Most regions, frankly, use the sales tax for most, if not all, of their. I mean, so we didn't make up the sales tax. We're just trying to do what pretty much every single other metropolitan area in the country does. We're one of, I think, about the only one of our size or smaller or larger that doesn't use some portion of their sales tax specifically for transit operations and capital.
Sir Dill.
And that begets the problem we've had with transit all these years. The general fund commitment has been going down. Meanwhile, operations have been reduced, fares have been increased, and, of course, the MBES has been underperforming, so that's also harmed transit.
Sir Dill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. In 24 minutes, I'm supposed to give a lecture at the University of Minnesota, and I've been waiting here to get to the end of this bill to make a statement, and so I just want to jump ahead here just for a moment, and that is just to express my opinion, and that is on Article 11, we're going to move to more credit card and debit card systems for paying for various driver's licenses and other expenses associated with operating our motor vehicles. And I really think that's the wrong direction to go because of all the credit card problems people get into. And I noticed in Senator Pappas's higher ed bill, she has a provision in here to prohibit the sale or marketing of credit cards to students. So in this previous bill, we're trying to decrease the use of credit cards, and then we jump into the transportation bill, and we're going to increase the use of credit cards to pay for various things. And I just think that's not appropriate. And the other thing is that I've lost my thought during Duluth days, the vice chancellor or the chancellor of the University of Minnesota Duluth campus, I met over in Duluth days, and they were complaining about how the University of Minnesota was accepting all these credit cards from students to pay for tuition, which was kind of a shift in policy, and they thought that was just going to aggravate the credit card abuse situation that many students find themselves in. So that's my opinion. I got to leave. I don't know if I had my way, and maybe I don't understand it totally, but I'm wondering if we shouldn't just delete Section 11 or Article 11 and not provide an opportunity for people to pay with these darn credit cards. And on top of that, the language in here says you're going to increase the fees up to $5 per driver's license or per transaction just to pay for the cost of using the credit cards. So it's another tax increase in here. I know it's kind of convenient to get your money, but if we're going to do it, maybe we should at least let those that want to pay with green dollars get some kind of a discount.
Not a bad idea.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Dill, in regards to Article 11, we'll have somebody stop by and explain the rest of that to you. I know you're busy now, but we'll get somebody to see you.
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chair, I mean, we can. I know folks are anxious to go. We're going a little long here. I have just a couple of summary items, and we don't have to walk through the bill necessarily. The other transit pieces are mostly deal with policy issues. We talked about the local levy. We expand the transit taxing district in the metropolitan area, so it's contiguous with the 7-county metro area, change the Metropolitan Council's levy authority to correspond to that. That recognizes that a great deal of the transit service provided, as well as those who are using transit services, are coming from that. It's just recognizing that the world has changed and moved on, consistent with all those hearings that we had all over the metropolitan area as well. There are a few agency bills in here. One allows Met Council to serve as the lead agency for the purpose of constructing and operating light rail transit. One deals with this audit on transit services, paratransit services that they were required. Metro Transit was required to provide. That becomes a report that's consistent when they update their transportation policy plans. Additionally, we do some changes to their Metropolitan Police Authority, so they're better able to coordinate with other police jurisdictions and their jurisdiction on commuter rail and on buses that are using shoulder lanes and the like is recognized, and ability to seize and make use of seized property that's forfeited in the commission of a crime, much like every other police department is able to do, is established. We established a sales tax waiver for future rail, as well as Hiawatha Rail. It's consistent with what we did with Hiawatha Light Rail Transit, and we allow for the construction of the Fridley North Star Station, which was a fiscal item, was taken out of the North Star project because of fiscal issues. The money is now raised in the context of this bill, so we can insert that back in. That's the extent of what we've got.
Mm-hmm. And
Senator Murphy.
And Mr. Chairman, there's two more amendments that need to be made. Mr. Massman clued us in on both of these. One's the A8 amendment. I forgot to offer that up. That deals with the compensation adjustments. Kind of puts it in the ballpark that we spoke about earlier. And, Mr. Chairman, I would go ahead and move the A8 amendment. This was supposed to be part of the compensation amendment that we made earlier. And
yes, Senator Murphy, this is language being carried in all the finance bills.
Right.
Let's wait until it's been distributed. Okay, we have the A8 amendment in front of us. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. And then on page 2 of Article 1, there was we need to delete lines 21 through lines 30, and that's that airport funding advisory task force that we threw out. Don't worry about the money in there. It's the money on the right-hand column stays, and but we need to get rid of the language. So I would move to strike lines 21 through lines 30.
This is on the A4 amendment, Mr. Chair?
That would be correct. That's in the Article 1.
Okay, we have Senator Murphy's motion in front of us. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Murphy.
And, Mr. Chairman, I would move that Senate File 1986, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Taxes.
And, Senator Murphy, just to comment, obviously this would go to the Tax Committee. One, obviously it's got two taxes in it. It also has a couple of tax exemptions in it as well.
Right.
Senator Neville.
Mr. Chair, before we act on that, I have an A1 amendment I'd like to offer. Have you had a chance to see that, Senator Murphy?
Mr. Chairman, this is a good amendment. We'll take her.
You want to tell us what it does?
I'll tell you.
In case
it
I have an amendment.
Senator Neville?
This deals with a traffic situation in Belle Plaine, city I represent, in southern Scott County, which is growing very rapidly. There's a construction project pending, and there's been some difficulty with and concern among Belle Plaine officials about how they're going to be able to cross Highway 169. Mm. This amendment would prohibit the DOT from constructing a J-turn, which is, to the best of my knowledge, there isn't any right now in Minnesota. They kind of want to make this as a test case, I guess. But this would prohibit them from spending about $750,000 on a J-turn, which the community feels is not appropriate for a high-speed thoroughfare. It would also direct the county, city, and DOT to discuss how they're going to have a second crossing on County Road 3 require a traffic light to stay in place until they do that. Without this, Belle Plaine is one of those cities that's grown so that half the town's on one side of 169 and half's on the other. There are people who live on the new side of town who might have to travel, 3 miles in order to get to the school, which is on the other side, without keeping that stoplight open. So at least for now, I'd like to keep this in the bill.
Okay. All right, we have Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, I oppose the A1 amendment. Highway 169 is a four-lane highway. When it was constructed in the 50s, 60s, and early 70s, I believe it was constructed with sight lines and engineering for a 70 or 75-mile-an-hour speed limit. It's a major corridor for all of southwest Minnesota, for a lot of truck traffic, a lot of commerce coming into the metropolitan area and going back out. Unfortunately, there was allowed to be a stoplight put on 169 at Belle Plaine, so all that traffic has to stop. The MnDOT has a overpass. It's going to be open, I believe, within a year or so. There's a way for Belle Plaine residents to get across the highway with that intersection that's under construction now. The reason why is to allow stoplights to remain on that highways. Essentially what it's doing is taking a highway that's designed for, I think, 75 miles an hour and turning it into a local street. And that's not just an inconvenience for Belle Plaine. That affects all of the industry, all the traffic in southwest Minnesota.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't deny that the best solution is an overpass, and that's what this amendment does. It directs them to begin planning and meeting for another overpass and to figure out how soon they can do it and who's going to pay for it. A lot of that will be put on local developers who need that interchange there. But Belle Plaine used to have about, I think, four or five crossovers on Highway 169. When this construction project is over, they'll have one. And that's not enough to have the communities connected. So, I understand the argument Senator Fredrickson's making. In the long run, Highway 169 is going to be a thoroughfare from the Twin Cities down to Mankato. Well, at least maybe to St. Peter, because then they got to go through downtown, and there's a bunch of stoplights there. Mm-hmm. And, of course, there's a bunch of stoplights in Jordan. And so Highway 169 is a long way from being a thoroughfare. There's lots of stoplights on it right now, and Belle Plaine needs one in order for their town to be connected.
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, in the regard to traffic safety, the one thing that MnDOT is consistent in saying is that if you do put up some sort of traffic signal, you're going to increase the number of rear-end accidents. And rear-end accidents are normally less severe than some of the other accidents where people are going, like side impact. And I think what Senator Neville's trying to do is trying to avoid some of those high-speed side impact crashes. Will there be some more rear-end crashes? More than likely, but they're not nearly as devastating as the T-bone, what people call the T-bone. And Senator Neville talked to me about this earlier, and I think it makes sense until they can kind of get this situation straightened out.
We have the A1 amendment in front of us. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.